square, and they talk about what they do now after the revolution. Debts were all forgiven in all the neo colonies. Soldiers left their bases, went back.
This is a Quality News Network. The U.S. military has recovered the bodies of two U.S. soldiers missing since Friday. The bodies were reportedly booby-trapped and the path to them strewn with improvised explosive devices. One group stated in a web posting that the killings were in retaliation for the death of former leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. In Washington, a defense official says a U.S. missile defense system has been activated. The move comes after North Korea announced that it's put a long-range missile on a launch pad. The Associated Press reports that the Bush administration is weighing how to respond, including shooting down the missile if it's launched. In South Korea, the country's foreign minister says it has not yet been determined whether North Korea has put fuel in the missile. Earlier reports suggested that fueling had already been completed and the missile could be launched at any moment. In Washington today, Republican leaders said widespread immigration reform is not likely to be passed this year. House Speaker Dennis Hastert has called for a series of hearings on the issue, saying it's more important to secure the nation's borders than to provide a path to citizenship for millions of illegal immigrants. In Arizona today, the head of U.S. Customs and Border Protection said building a wall along the Mexican border is not practical. He said new technology and air operations are also needed to control the border, in addition to fencing embedded with sensors and vehicle barriers. In Pennsylvania, the city council of the small town of Hazleton has approved a measure that would revoke the business license of any company that hires illegal immigrants. The move comes after two illegal immigrants were charged with shooting and killing a man. In Vienna tomorrow, President Bush will attend a U.S.-European Union summit. The leaders are expected to speak about Iran's uranium enrichment program. Mr. Bush is also expected to promise to uphold human rights during the war on terror. In Gaza today, three children were killed and nine bystanders injured in an Israeli airstrike aimed at Palestinian militants. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert are scheduled to meet tomorrow in Jordan. In Washington, former Bush administration official David Safavian has been found guilty of lying and obstruction of justice. Safavian, who has ties to Jack Abramoff, was accused of covering up his dealings with the disgraced lobbyist. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Mrs. Noose is next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Some of the largest hospitals in the country have been sued in a class action lawsuit. The suit claims hospital administrators conspired to keep nurse wages low. In New York, a scaled back September 11th memorial has been unveiled. Developers were asked to reduce the cost to $500 million after the original plans neared $1 billion. In May, construction of new homes and apartments increased following three straight months of declines. The Commerce Department credits warmer, dry weather for the boost. One of the three major credit bureaus, Equifax, reports an employee's laptop computer was stolen near London. It contained the names and social security numbers of as many as 2,500 employees. In New York, CBS has announced that former anchor Dan Rather has left the network. The 74-year-old journalist has been with CBS News for 44 years. Kmart is selling off some high-priced art from its corporate headquarters. A rare Picasso tapestry and 15th-century Chinese Ming Dynasty watercolor are among the items being sold. Lego, the Danish company that has made those little plastic building blocks for more than 70 years, announced it's cutting 1,200 jobs. The average nationwide price for a gallon of unleaded gasoline is now just below $2.90. Light sweet crude settled at $68.94 at the close of Wall Street. The Dow was up 33 points, NASDAQ down 3, S&P 500 flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's Tuesday, and I missed my favorite day of the week. I missed Monday. But we'll just treat this like Monday, if that's okay with you. Now, almost 7 minutes past the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Your daily confrontation with the facts, whether it be evening, early evening, late at night, sometime in the afternoon, God only knows where on planet Earth you might be. I'm glad that you're right here. And there is, of course, a lot to talk about tonight. You can choose for yourself, and, you heard the phone number there, 877-443-2366, 877, the number 4, Head On. Okay? That being the case, you can bring to the table just about anything you want, but let's tick them off. The Safavian verdict. We got that, right? We've got the news of the two soldiers who are said to have been killed after they were kidnapped in Iraq. We've got that. You got the Dan Rather quit at CBS. You've got Lego, if you heard our top of the hour news from the fine folks at the Quality News Network. Lego is engaging a big old layoff because children are too jaded to play with toys that they actually have to touch with their little fingers anymore. So it's not like we don't have stuff to talk about. But you know how I am. You know that old saying that's out there, don't sweat the small stuff. I guess I've got a problem, because the fact of the matter is, I do sweat the small stuff. And by sweating the small stuff, I mean the way things wind up in the news, and what they wind up looking like, who winds up saying them, how it gets said, because it really is that kind of stuff that makes you want to run screaming into the yard, tearing at your hair and ripping your clothes off and looking for the nearest pile of the sackcloth and ashes. And for me, that comes from the story about the Iraq, what are you going to call them, kidnappings? I don't get a chance, nor do I much avail myself of listening to right-wing freak radio anymore. To be quite honest, I do my best to avoid it. But the fact is, I can't help but wonder how Freakville is reacting to the tragic, horrific deaths of these two young soldiers. Because I know how it makes me feel. It makes me want to gag. It makes me weep. But in the news report, some general in Iraq, or possibly in the United States, who has never seen the outside of an air-conditioned office since this war began, issued some statement in which he was quoted, and I remember it well because it fairly seared itself into my brain. He said, the two soldiers were, quote, abducted by anti-Iraqi insurgents, unquote. They were abducted by anti-Iraqi insurgents. That is the level of desperation to which this Pentagon, which cannot help but reflect the cowardly, inept leadership of the White House, that's how far they've sunken. Now the people who oppose us are anti-Iraqis. I guess that means that since our two soldiers were kidnapped by anti-Iraqi forces, I guess that means that our two soldiers were Iraqis? You see how the language works? Oh, yes. Oh, Lord God, Billy Bob, I remember the Clinton administration, and I remember the right-wing freaks hopping up and down. Words mean things. Oh, yeah. So now in the absolute, abjectly, miserably failed propaganda war that the Pentagon is trying to wage, now if you oppose Americans being in Iraq, if you happen to live there, if you happen to be an Iraqi, and you don't agree with having your country occupied on the orders of a jug-eared, pig-eyed, tin-horned little lout who happens to live at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, you're an anti-Iraqi. Well, you know, it kind of had to happen sooner or later, didn't it? After all, I knew, you knew, we knew, before the war started, that it was A, gonna start, no matter what happened. From the first time George Bush mentioned the name of Saddam Hussein, you know that he was absolutely chin deep in the weird psychopathy that is his relationship with his daddy. Oedipus? Oedipus was a Sunday school boy. But you knew there was going to be a war with Iraq. And I knew. And we kept going, guys, maybe, you know, getting a bunch of Americans killed and wounded. Ain't nobody going to get hurt. Nobody got hurt in Kosovo. Nobody's going to get hurt. We're going to go over there and we're going to find the weapons of mass destruction. No, we're not going to find the weapons of mass destruction. We're going to free the Iraqis. No, we're not going to free the Iraqis. We're going to end the insurgency. No, we're not going to end the insurgency. We're going to do force protection. But at the end of the day, what we were, according to the Freepers and the Republicans and the Christians, so-called, the members of the religion industry, you know what I mean. At the end of the day, they came down to one phrase, and they used it on us freely, didn't they? They damn sure did. They called us un-American. It's un-American not to want to make war on Iraq. It's un-American. You hear me? Saddam can put a nuclear bomb on top of London in 45 minutes. It's un-American not to want to eliminate that kind of worldwide terrorist threat. And, you know, whether it was the Dixie Chicks or me, I don't think I've been on the air a week over in Beckley when I got called Al Kincaida. Oh, that was cute. Or Baghdad Bob. Because they wanted them a war because wars is fun. Jesus loves war. You see. So now that's where it's come to, because, you know, it turns out we were right. Liberals, progressives, you know, lily-livered, kumbaya-singing cowards that we are, we were right. And Iraq is a quagmire. And it was an unnecessary war, and that war, oh, we were right again, was founded on lies. So, you know, un-American and sissy and all of that stuff doesn't really work with us anymore, does it? No, it doesn't, sunshine. It doesn't work at all. Because, again, there were no weapons of mass destruction. There was no imminent, chemical gas attack. There was no secret nuclear laboratory. No, they turned out to be a little across the Shatal Arab waterway, just a stone's throw away. There was none of that. There was none of that. And we made war anyway, and 2,500 Americans are dead. 20,000 or more. And frankly, I don't believe that it's 2,500 Americans dead, because those are only the ones that die over there. They're not the ones that die on the way to Landstuhl, Germany, and they're not the ones that die when they come back here. Is the number of dead from Iraq included in, is that guy who committed death by cop, suicide by cop outside of a liquor store in L.A. a year or so ago, is that guy listed in the war dead from Iraq? Hell no! So, no, 2,500. We passed 2,500 a long time ago, sunshine. They just didn't tell you. 2,500 doesn't include what's the number one injury of soldiers coming back from Iraq? What's the real biggie? What's the injury of du jour of this war? TBI, traumatic brain injury, where, you know, somebody came home, but it ain't the guy who went over. Not mentally, not emotionally, not psychologically, not spiritually, and barely physically. So, you know, all that happened, we were right, and you can't call us sissy anymore. Or un-American. So what do we got? We've got the Pentagon, which is boiled down to the point where they have to refer to the people who are trying to do what little to us that they can to oppose the fact that we are occupying their country. Not ours, by the way. Not ours. Theirs. They're anti-Iraqi insurgents. Anti-Iraqi insurgents. That's right. That's right. And, you know, the anti-Iraqi insurgents are going to figure out pretty soon that it doesn't work with them either. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Some member of the American brass sitting in a 68-degree Pentagon office in a big old overstuffed chair with a big old desk in front of him calling people who oppose an occupation anti-Iraqi? Blows my mind. I mean, Jack Murtha referred to Karl Rove sitting on his big fat butt. Those are Murtha's words, not mine. Talking about success in Iraq. And Murtha was right, of course. And in exchange for his comments, Ann Coulter refers to him as that's why they invented fragging. By God, I bet the men who served under Jack Murtha were glad he was there. Let's go to the phones. Andy joins us from the UK. Andy, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Hey, man, no worries. Well, I'm doing you all a national service, so I should get a Silver Star for Valor or something for this.
We'll get to work on it.
I sat through an Alan Coulter interview.
Oh, God.
But it was with Jeremy Paxman. Now, for all of you out there that know nothing about British TV, John Major, our last Prime Minister, once described being interviewed by Jeremy Paxman like sitting there thinking you're about to get punched in the face by this guy and you don't know what the right answer is anyway.
Oh, I hope that was just as much fun.
Well, he interviewed Coulter, and because he interviewed her, he had to read the chapter of her book, at least the beginning of it, because otherwise, you know, you're being an American journalist, not a British journalist. So he read it, and the distaste on his face when he started the interview, I mean, he's one of these guys that shows his emotions quite openly, do you know what I mean? And he just looked revolted, you know, that physically sick look. And so he started the interview with her. And I mean, I implore you all to go and watch it yourselves, and I'll give you all the website in a second.
Okay.
But he started this interview with her, and basically, like, just sort of opened it up with her arguments against Darwinism and stuff, and said, you know, how is it you're describing Darwinism as a religious belief? You know, do you believe in creationism? And she wouldn't answer the question. And so he asked her a couple of other ones of those sort of topics, and she just wouldn't answer properly. In the end, she just said, yes, I agree with everything in my book. Obviously can't remember what it is she's agreeing with.
Well, you know, it's tough when you try to write a bestseller on myth.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, she just makes it up as she goes along. We all know that, you know, her facts are spurious facts. They're not actual facts. But she then said she actually had the temerity to complain about the treatment she was getting. Yeah, because obviously they weren't treating her the way Fox do. You're fawning all over her. And she said, oh, well, after this warm introduction. And he said, warm introduction? Just cut her off dead. I'll give you a warm introduction. And went on to quote that bit from her book about these broads who were enjoying their husband's death. That was, you know, about the widows.
Yeah.
And said, how about that for a warm introduction then? And she just didn't know what to say. It was brilliant. I mean, you know how she normally, like, as soon as they stop talking, she starts rabbiting off on her right-wing rants on interviews. She just couldn't. She didn't know what to say.
She can't. She can't deal with someone of a mindset. I mean, if somebody's any more ferocious than, say, Alan Colmes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Jeremy Paxman's not liberal, not conservative. I've no idea what his personal politics are, but he does not bring them to his show. What he does is he ferrets the truth out and sits there proving people liars if they're lying. You know, he's a proper interviewer, and because the BBC are really kind, and I'm effectively paying for it through my license fee, they put the show up for a 24-hour period after the nightly show. So if you go to www.bbc.co.uk/newsnight, and that's spelled properly, N-I-G-H-T.
Yes.
The show will be there. They're available for streaming, and so you can watch the interview yourselves. It's brilliant. It's something everybody should see. Ann Coulter getting, lapped. It's just when you get to the page, it's just got a little video link, and it opens up a little Real Player or a Windows Media Player, whichever you like.
Well, I hope the timing works out that I can watch it after the show, Andy. Because
it's on for 24 hours, and it only went up about an hour ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you'll be able to squeeze that in. The show's only about 50 minutes long, but it's definitely worth watching. And I suggest everybody try and squeeze a 50 minutes slot of their day in to watch Newsnight every day, because it's normally got at least two interesting bits and one mildly interesting bit. And at the moment, a lot of it's on about China and America and stuff, so, and Iraq, obviously.
Right.
So, and they actually have the truth. You know, I mean, that you're talking about numbers of American dead. Well, okay, 2,500 and a few have died in Iraq. I'm not sure how many died on the way to that base you were talking about, but on the way to or at Ramstein Air Base in Germany, it's just over 1,500, I believe.
Yeah.
And then if you count all the ones that die at some point between there and America...
Right, and that's the thing. They don't go into the 2,500, Andy.
No, and you know, then there's all the ones, like you said, suicide by cop or just get home and kill themselves or...
Or kill the wife and kids before they kill themselves.
Yeah, a lot of that too. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, as for the Iraqis, it was over 150,000, like, 2 years ago, mate.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, anybody who's not related to the American government or the British government says, well, we're probably past 250,000 now. Probably.
Well, yeah, and on the same day, Andy, that Dear Leader went to Baghdad to proclaim, ah, it's going great, you know, when he pulled that stupid little stunt, you know, 5 hours in, yeah, he was there for 5 hours. At the same time, the New York Times, a miracle that they even referred to it, the New York Times got their hands on a memo sent from the office of the ambassador to Iraq, Mr. Khalilzad.
Yeah, Khalilzad.
Yeah, did you see about that?
Yeah, it was actually up on the main news here. You know, we covered, like, George Bush flew into Baghdad under cover of night.
Well, this memo, though, has to do with the Iraqis who work in the American embassy.
Yeah, they can't wear anything that looks remotely Western. They can't be known to work there. They, you know, taxi drivers are being executed for taking them near there. The situation is insane. And, you know, I mean, John Death Squad Negroponte is responsible for a whole bunch of it.
Sure.
You know, I mean, we know what the problem is. The problem is these people didn't ever intend to build a nation after they crushed it. You know, they only ever intended to take the money that the Americans had. I mean, people think it's about stealing money from Iraq, and it's not really about that. I mean, the money they've made in Iraq is just a bonus. I mean, it's really about signing contracts for Halliburton that will make a lot of money out of the American taxpayer, which, of course, will be paid back by your grandchildren when China come knocking for the owed money.
Yeah, and it's going to be paid back with an interest that you and I can't contemplate, Andy.
Well, you know, I mean, look at what's happening now. China is stealing your weapons technology and your high-tech computer technology at a rate that's incredible. I mean, there was a thing on Newsnight about the FBI investigation into Chinese spying in America, and they think that every single major American technology company is having its having all of its you know, secret technology and patented systems and stuff just exported wholesale to China right now. Every single one.
It's hard.
All that brand new funky stealth boat technology.
Yeah.
Yeah, China's got it.
Sure.
You know who sold you that? That was us. I mean, you know, Britain's the number one leader in stealth technology. A lot of people don't know that. But we sell you stuff, and then our spies report it turned up in a Chinese port.
You know, kind of make sure, you know, and the fit, you know, do you remember the fits that were had about the L'Oreal Corporation under Bill Clinton, Andy? Oh, Bill Clinton's selling us out to the Chinese.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if Bill Clinton sold us out to the Chinese, these darn fools are giving it away.
No, they've done worse than that. They've tied your hands, they've given them, having given them the key, and then they've slit your throat as the Chinese enter the door just to make sure you don't cause any trouble. Because, I mean...
I know.
The world situation is ridiculous. I mean, these people look at China and go, ah, China's a rising economic power, and we're going to have to, you know, I don't know, transfer all our stuff there and become good little communists, I think is what all the rich people are thinking, since they're a rich communist now. But they don't understand that China's going to collapse, because China doesn't have anywhere near the well, I mean...
Well, China doesn't have the 100 years of easy fossil fuels that we had to build our industrial revolution on.
Well, it's not even just that. There are 3 civil wars going on in China, excluding the long-standing one with Taiwan. People don't report on it because it doesn't get out much, but there are Muslims fighting them in the West, there's Tibetans fighting them in Tibet, and then there's, like, Chinese nationalist separatists fighting them in the South. I mean, China is not a stable country. As much as they'd like to say they are, they're not. They're not at all. And you know, what happens when the U.S. has sold all of its power to China and it's auctioning off its aircraft carriers and nuclear submarines to the highest bidder to pay the debt, and then China collapses? You know, I mean, the whole world is shaky enough with all these nuclear weapons. And
yeah, and the thing is, I mean, Andy, you're not talking about 150, 200 years from now.
No, I'm talking about 2018, 2020.
Yeah.
Because there's a guy here, the chief policy strategist for the Ministry of Defense over here, has said in 2018, Europe's going to be in trouble, but not half as much trouble as the rest of the world's going to be in, because our problem is going to be Muslim insurgencies, like wholesale Muslim insurgencies, because the governments at the moment are doing nothing to fix the problems we have with isolated pockets of Muslims who feel disaffected and disaffected.
Well, like the rioting in France last year.
Well, France is a special case. France is particularly bad. I mean, we have the same sort of problems, but not to the same degree. And we also don't have... the French have this habit of ringing their cities with immigrants. Like, literally, the inner cities all French and the outer cities all immigrants. And we haven't really done that. So we don't have the odd sort of under siege mentality that they get in France. It's a, you know, it's a satiated argument.
Well, and then they pass laws, Andy, that amount, you know, you take a disaffected, angry population, and then you pass laws that amount to poking them with a stick.
Well, it's the let them eat cake thing that the French have. The French, you know, I mean, the French apparently got rid of their aristocracy a few hundred years ago, but they never did. They just killed all the current ones and installed a bunch of new ones. I mean, you know, Jacques Chirac and all of his ilk, they're as aristocratic as you like. I mean, none of them care about the common people of France, just like none of Tony Blair and George Bush care about the common people of Britain and America.
Same problem, different language.
Well, that's it, absolutely. I mean, why should George Bush give a damn? He's already rich. Why should Tony Blair give a damn? He's going to be rich as soon as the Carlton Group hire him, as soon as he gets out of
office. And the social structure is such that they can feel fairly comfortable in the idea that they're not going to get eaten.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the problem is that most of them don't actually live connected to the real world. Most of them don't understand the basic sort of dynamics of society. And the basic dynamic of society is food, and the second one is shelter. And if they mess things up enough, well, we all know it's three meals until the end of the world, as it were, current civilization. You know, there are parts of America where people aren't getting any meals, let alone just the one meal that will keep them just about fed.
Well, you know, it's the Republican three meals a day plan, Andy.
Mm.
Oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, they don't understand, because they are unwilling to be students of history, what will happen when it happens. I mean, you know, your revolution wasn't a normal revolution. So you guys have a peculiarly skewed idea of revolution and civil war and all that sort of stuff. I mean, well, if we want to get right back to it, the British Crown should never have been involved in America, because the Mayflower settlers shouldn't have started a war with the Indians they couldn't win, and then they shouldn't have asked the king to come and get involved.
For want of a nail, a shoe was lost.
Well, that's it, you know. Yeah. And then you had to kick the king out because your rich people there didn't want to pay the taxes. Of course, most of the poor people didn't give a damn who was in charge. It was the king or the president. Who cares? And then, of course, you had a civil war, and your civil war was particularly bizarre because it was essentially kind of fought over rights. And most civil wars aren't. They're mostly fought over, like, you know, one group wants to take control from another group, and that could be
enough. Well, you know, that's very interesting. You should touch on that, Andy. We all need to say happy birthday today. This is 63, 83, 03. What, the 143rd anniversary of the formation of the state of West Virginia, carved out by a bunch of people who absolutely refused to be party to the slaveholding interests of old Virginia and seceded from Virginia and joined the United States.
All right. Well, happy birthday and congratulations. What a wonderful choice.
Yeah. Hooray for us. We were on the right side for once. You know, 20 years later, coal's discovered and we're screwed.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, story of anywhere that's got mountains, really, isn't it? Oh, there's something in there we want. Ha ha. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Andy, thanks so much. Always so good to talk to you. I'm going to go and watch the interview. If there's any opportunity to see Ann Coulter get a little bit, even a millionth of what she's got coming to her, I'm there for.
She obviously didn't get as long as she wanted to get, and she didn't get any of the questions she wanted to get. And what more could you ask for than that?
Thanks so much, Andy. Have a wonderful night.
You too, man. Take care.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
Yeah, that is something. This is the anniversary of the formation of the state of West Virginia. Happy birthday, you poor little bedraggled, misbegotten, woe-betided state. Happy birthday. We're doing all we can to make it better. So we'll come back here in a moment. Andy touched on a bunch of things that I want to get with, but I don't think we're at the bottom of the Iraqi soldier story yet. And I'll tell you why when we get back. This is the Head On Radio Network. Me, I'm Bob Kincaid. You know the phone number. 877-443-2366. Got a guest coming later tonight, too. Hope you'll stay with us.
There's a nail in the door, and there's glass on the lawn. Tacks on the floor, and the TV's on. Just
G'day, everybody. On this week's Fourth Estate, we have a very candid interview with the one, the only, Robert Fisk.
There's always been in America this feeling that to be a journalist and question your country's foreign policy, especially in time of war, which means always, according to George W. Bush, is somehow unpatriotic and thus potentially subversive. Mm. And add to that the enormous pressures which do exist for US American journalists, well, as they do for all of us, but more the Americans, from those supporters of Israel in the major lobby groups in the United States, like AIPAC. Mm. And the what has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism.
So don't miss it. Get the details at fourthestateradio.com, 10 p.m. Eastern Saturday on the Head On Radio Network.
The major record labels say that downloading their music from the internet is stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show. When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. When an MC rhymes over a sampled beat, that's stealing. Have you ever sung Happy Birthday to your friend at a restaurant? Watch out, Happy Birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties, or you'd be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money. Don't pay for major label music, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Even better, burn the CDs of the music they like, so they won't even want to buy it. If we pull the plug on the major labels, music gets better. To find out more about what you can do, check out downhillbattle.org.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
Told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided they can't do it, that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Minutes before the hour. I'm Bob. This is Head On. It's Tuesday. Feels like Monday to me. And I hope your week is going well. I want to go back to the Iraqi soldier situation. Of course, we've seen. I hate to even mention it, but we've seen this movie before. The word that is most frequently used is desecration of the bodies of the American service members in Mogadishu. And, of course, they blamed that on Bill Clinton, even though that was the war that George Bush got himself involved in right before he left office. That was his little, that was his little welcome to the Oval Office gift to Bill Clinton. God, was it that long ago? Was a different person back then. But we've seen it before, and of course the right-wingers would get in a frenzy, and what kind of a response are you supposed to have to something like that? Among other things, you know, journalism did its job. The two soldiers were brutally killed. go find me a non-brutal killing, okay? The nine members of the United States Supreme Court are at least five of them, probably certifiably insane. And even the United States Supreme Court agreed last week that a person scheduled for execution by lethal injection has at least the right to claim in court that he is being subjected to cruel and unusual punishment. And, of course, we all know that because of the way the gurney is structured and the arms are stretched out, it's horizontal crucifixion for all intents and purposes. And no, getting those drugs doesn't make you go bye-bye, and that sort of makes me wonder, well, never mind, won't go there. Somebody will get upset, and probably for good reason. But even they recognize that there's no such thing as a gentle killing. It's the end. It's death. As far as we know, it's the end of the road. What happens afterward, we can't say. We don't know. But no, not a whole lot of people go to it with too much excitement. It was a brutal killing, Bill. And, you know, I'm sure it was. And, the agony that I feel just thinking about the families of those two poor soldiers. Who shouldn't have been there, who should not have been there, who should not have been sent there by that little maniac at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. We will stay the course and we will stand down when the Iraqis stand up. And we will show the people that their loved ones who died shall not have died in vain. Listen, dipstick, you're not Abraham Lincoln and this ain't Gettysburg and it don't work. Well, they were brutally killed. And not a word. Unless you read somebody like Robert Fisk or Dar Jamal or the very teeny tiny handful of other people who actually report on what this war has done to Iraq, you're never going to hear that, Mahmoud and his wife Salaha and their four children were brutally killed by American troops. Or were brutally killed when a 500-pound bomb dropped on their house. Or were brutally killed when a Tomahawk cruise missile slammed into their hut. No. You remember, the Pentagon can't even be bothered to count the number of Iraqi dead. They were asked about it early on, and some hide-bound, brass-covered general with the padded chair and a big desk said, "Wow, we really, it is not within the mission scope of the Department of Defense to count the number of the dead civilians. We regret any collateral damage." And that's it. I regret collateral damage. Where's my scotch? And there's no intrepid reporter standing there to describe the killing as brutal. And if you... where are the wingnuts when I need them? Because, you know, the wingnuts, you know, that's your Second Amendment crowd. That's your "you can have my gun when you pry it from my cold dead fingers" crowd. That's the crowd that drives around, and I saw one of these while I was in Alabama. I think it was our good friend David in Tennessee who had mentioned it once upon a time. I'd never seen it before. It was a sticker, and the car had Alabama plates. It was a sticker on the back of the car that said, "State of Nebraska, official terrorist hunting permit." Yeah. Yeah. But these wingnuts, these Republicans, these guardians of the Second Amendment, these people who think that it's an impingement upon our rights to not think it's such a good idea to sell 40-round clip semi-automatic, almost machine guns to kids in Jamaica, Queens. These guys, those people. What would they do? What would they do if this country was invaded? Well, the fact of the matter is what those pissants would do is they would capitulate, turn in their guns, bow down, and try to find out which flag it was they were supposed to salute. Because, you know, your average Republican, your average conservative, your average Bush voter is about as Vichy as you can get. People like you and me, we'd figure out a way to fight. Because it does mean something, our heritage. It does mean something, our families. And it does mean something more than any the Constitution. And having that come under attack would mean something to us. But what would they do? Because, you see, I guess what I'm trying to get around to, and it's so pathetic, those two privates, those two Army privates or Marine privates, those two young, early 20-something soldiers, you do realize, of course, who they were in the eyes of their captors. They weren't random soldiers. They weren't just a couple of poor dudes who were in the wrong place at the wrong time. They were you, and they were me. And more than anything else in the world, they were George W. Bush. And everything that they did to those two pathetic, pitiful, oh my God, young men was nothing more than a manifestation of what they would have loved to do to George Bush if they had the opportunity. Because George Bush is America now to the people of Iraq. And the people of Iraq recognize that we're not leaving. Oh, we've got politicians who, oh, we need a timetable. And other politicians who say, oh, wow, yeah, we can't cut and run. And other politicians, amazingly enough, from the Republican Party, and as well as Joe Lieberman, who stand up and say, well, we must stay the course. And if they followed the American political landscape at all prior to the 2004 election, maybe, like the rest of the world, the Iraqi people had this notion that something had just gone terribly wrong in 2000, and that if we would use the so-called democratic form of government that we have to replace, remove, and rid ourselves of the horrible mistake that was George W. Bush through peaceful and lawful and constitutionally enshrined means, that maybe we'd get out of their country and we could work toward reconciliation. But you see, 2004 put paid to that. 2004 said, nope, sorry, Iraqis, it wasn't a mistake. There's a whole bunch of people over here who don't give a tinker's damn what happens to you. They call you things like camel jockey and raghead and rug merchant and haji. And we don't report on your injured, your dead, your miserable. We don't do that. And we don't care. And that is the conviction that has taken residence inside the hearts and minds, if you will, of the Iraqi people. If the Americans think anything at all about Iraq, the thinking they do is not to care. They don't care. That's what the Iraqi people know now. They don't believe it. They know it because we have proven it. Oh, they died a brutal death. They were brutally killed. What's wrong with people? What's wrong with using the language? Those two young men, God, I hope there's a heaven or a paradise or something so they can be in it. Those two young men, though, they were stand-ins for George W. Bush because the Iraqi people can't get to him. I mentioned the memo that's been circulated or going around or whatever that was obtained by the New York Times that was it was a cable from the Iraqi embassy in Baghdad with Khalilzad, the name, at the bottom of it. And it, in catalog fashion, point by point by point by point, it detailed the miserable, hellish life, even for the Iraqis who work in the U.S. embassy. Inside the green zone, they can't take their cell phones home with them of an evening because it might ring and mama or daddy might find out that they were collaborators with the Americans. Or God forbid a neighbor or a friend was over and that happened, because they would be dead come morning. There is, as it is presently constituted, there is no way out of this mess. And that grieves me, to even put into words. There is one answer and one answer only. And at some point it will become the answer, because it is the only answer. Whether it's a day from now, a month from now, or a year from now, or a decade from now, there is one answer to this war. Get out now.
Well, Bob, that's unrealistic. Obviously, you don't understand the full ramifications of military logistics.
Horse hockey. I understand the ramifications of what happens to squatters. Now, we can say, oh, well, we've established a timetable and we're going to get out on June the 21st, 2007. And we will have peace with honor. But on June 21st, 2007, it turns out the answer is, as I have put it forward, get out now. Whatever day it is, we're going to say, well, we're leaving now. Now, you all know I'm not in the marching orders business, but, you know, do we even talk about this in our civic discourse anymore? Or do we have to sort of go to our respective corners and the wing nuts listen to Falwell and Robertson and the Hannity and O'Reilly and Savage and Limbaugh and Beck and the rest of that greasy, filthy, dirty, fascist crowd, and the normal people come over and they listen to Bob Kincaid, or they listen to Mike Malloy, or they listen, you know, they listen to Sam Cedar, the Turks. They listen to Randy. They listen to Bruce. They listen to John. The Head On Radio Network, Air America, Tom Hartman out there, Peter B. Collins, Peter Werby. The normal people come to our corner. And we talk about it, but we don't talk about it hell, we don't talk, this is America, we don't talk about anything anymore to anybody. We spend a lot of time getting talked at and talked to, and talking at and talking to others. But not so much just ourselves. And we suffer for it. Things like the Iraq War happen because one side is allowed to shout down the other, whether it's in journalism or politics. It's tragic. But if you should happen to be in a position where someone can bring it up, there, tell them. There is only one answer. Get out now. You know, this isn't some old country song about before the next teardrop falls. This is before the next body falls. And we need to resurrect John Kerry's question. How do you ask someone to be the last person to die for a mistake? I wish he had the balls to ask that question now. There is only one answer. If you are sick of seeing stupid pieces of journalism talking about generals who say that soldiers were killed by anti-Iraqi forces, or stories where generals come out and say, well, they were brutally killed. You know, that's because, you know, generals say those kinds of things because they think you and me are morons. They think that we've forgotten the old, it's not an adage, it's a truth, that generally the people who die on battlefields, the last thing they call out, oh, they're not, I'm coming to you, Jesus! They call for their mothers. They call for their mothers. And whatever mama is in Arabic, they call for their mothers. And how many mothers have we slain there? 75,000, 100,000 times a little one or a grown one has called out for his mama or her mama, and mama is already laying dead beside them. There is only one solution to Iraq. There is only one. There can be only one. Get out now. And every time you hear someone, and I will say, be they Democrat or Republican, saying, well, you know, we must have a stable Iraq before we can leave, and, well, you know, we cannot cut and run because that would... You know when they talk that kind of crap that you're listening to a hypocrite and a liar and a killer. There is only one answer to the problem that is Iraq. Get out now. You know, in criminal proceedings, there are things called ongoing criminal activities or ongoing criminal enterprises. And let's say you get busted for one of those and you're up in front of the judge and you've been convicted and you're going for sentencing. You know, one of the things the judge looks at is, well, you know, when you figured out you were doing wrong, did you stop doing wrong? And if you didn't, it goes so much harder. This is that. This is that. This is the reality of the United States of America actively engaged in a criminal ongoing enterprise and patently refusing on the parts of many Democrats and almost all Republicans to stop doing it. Because, of course, they don't have to do it themselves. They've got a military that they can shove around and make do it for them. And then let them come home and suffer because there's not adequate funding for veterans returning care from the war. There is only one legitimate debate with regard to this war. There is only one legitimate debate if we want to see an end to brutalized bodies and shells of human beings coming home. My God, that news story about the abduction said, of course, Jessica Lynch was abducted. Jessica Lynch was taken to the hospital after she was damn near killed in a car wreck. She was abducted. No, she wasn't. They tried to save her. Our side. They tried to take her back to our people. Our people shot at them. The ambulance. They shot at the ambulance. There is only one debate with regard to this war, and that debate is get out now. How do we do it? Get out now. Next year is not acceptable. Next year is not acceptable to the 1,500 people who will be dead and the 5,000 more who will be butchered, wounded. Get out now. And the sooner that our side figures out that we can't play footsie with the peace with honor crowd, the sooner it will happen. Get out now. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. The U.S. military has recovered the mutilated bodies of two U.S. soldiers who'd been missing since Friday. An insurgent group claimed responsibility for the deaths in a web posting, saying it's payback for the death of former Al-Qaeda leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. In Iraq, military investigators say two U.S. soldiers were murdered by Iraqi civil defense officers who were patrolling with them. The two men who were killed in 2004 were originally thought to be killed in an ambush. A full report on the incident will be available tomorrow. In Washington, a defense official says a U.S. missile defense system has been activated. That comes in response to an announcement from North Korea that it's prepared to test a long-range missile. The Associated Press reports that the Bush administration is discussing how to respond, including shooting down the missile if it is launched. In South Korea, the country's foreign minister says it has not been determined whether North Korea has put fuel in the missile. Earlier reports suggested that fueling had already been completed and the missile could be launched at any time. In Washington today, Republican congressional leaders said broad immigration reform legislation is very unlikely to be passed this year. House Speaker Dennis Hastert has called for a series of hearings on the immigration issue, saying it's more important to secure the borders than to provide a path to citizenship for illegal immigrants. In Arizona today, the head of U.S. Customs and Border Protection said building a wall along the Mexican border is not practical. He said new technology and air operations are also needed to control the border, in addition to fencing embedded with sensors and vehicle barriers. In Vienna tomorrow, President Bush will attend a U.S.-European Union summit. He is expected to urge the possibility of sanctions against Iran over its nuclear program and promise to uphold human rights during the war on terror. In New Orleans, 100 National Guard troops, along with 60 state police, arrived today at the mayor's request. An outbreak of violence this weekend killed six people, five of them teenagers. In Sedona, Arizona, fire crews are still trying to control a 1,500-acre wildfire. The blaze started Sunday and has forced evacuation of 500 homes and businesses. In Central America, large waves from a Pacific storm battered coastal areas of Nicaragua and Guatemala. 20 houses and a small hotel were destroyed. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The IRS is giving Gulf Coast taxpayers affected by Hurricane Katrina more time to file their tax returns for last year. The agency says they'll have an extra 7 weeks or until October 15th. Unionized nurses have filed a class action lawsuit against some of the largest hospitals in the country. The suit claims hospital administrators have conspired to keep wages low. In May, construction of new homes and apartments increased following three straight months of declines. The Commerce Department credits warmer, dry weather. Merrill Lynch says the number of global millionaires has increased. There are now 8.7 million millionaires worldwide. The largest growth has occurred in the Middle East due to record oil revenues. One of the three major credit bureaus, Equifax, reports an employee's laptop computer was stolen near London. It contained the names and social security numbers of as many as 2,500 employees. In New York, CBS has announced that former anchor Dan Rather has left the network. The 74-year-old journalist had been with CBS News for 44 years. Microsoft has unveiled its newly branded instant messaging system, Windows Live Messenger. It's the first major release Microsoft plans to offer to get more web advertising revenue. The average nationwide price for a gallon of unleaded gasoline is just below $2.90. Light sweet crude settled at $68.94 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 33 points, NASDAQ down 3, S&P 500 flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Tonight's final hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
It's time travel. It ain't hour three, it's hour two. It's 6 minutes after hour two. I'm Bob Kincaid. The things you hear in the news. I swear, you know, we talked a long while back about rubber bricks. I want some rubber bricks. Actually, I need a big foam rubber kicking thing, because it's kicking things that I want to do. The Associated Press reports, and it's one of those kick something moments, with regard to this. This business of, you know, the North Koreans are going to test a missile. Did you listen to the top of the hour news, right? I mean, those guys at QNN do a wonderful job. And they said, she said, according to the Associated Press, the United States is considering what to do if the North Koreans test launch their missile, including shooting it down. Including shooting it down. You know, and what preceded all of that was the fact that the United States has activated its missile defense system. Oh, you know which missile defense system they were talking about, don't you? Yeah, that's the missile defense system that Ronald Reagan was so senile that no, that wasn't senility. That was just a big bone thrown to his Republican defense contractor pals. But yeah, that missile defense system. Star Wars! Dum, dum, da, dum, dum, da, dum, dum, da, dum, dum, da, dum. The Force is strong with this one.
Not.
That's the missile defense system. The same missile defense system that, if memory serves me correctly, in March 2001, when people were trying to get the, you know, meetings with, when Richard Clark was running around with his hair on fire, trying to get a meeting with kind of sleazy Rice, who was out tuning her flute or whatever, piano, what is it she plays? He's trying to get a meeting with her because, you know, he was trying to explain to her that, you know, there are these really, really pissed off people in the Middle East, and it's us that they're pissed off about, and they've kind of had our number, and they've been doing rotten stuff to us, and, you know, Madam National Security Advisor, I'd like a chance to brief you and the President on this. And in March of 2001, what was it that, you know, besides tuning the flute, that was occupying Condi's attention? Oh, yeah. March 2001. We must reactivate the missile defense system and continue research and development on the missile defense system because North Korea is a part of the axle of evil. And, well, if we don't, you know, it'll be just terrible and they might nuke us. And, you know, everybody's got nukes and everybody wants to nuke the United States. And, Jesus, are you scared yet? We're trying to scare you. You're supposed to be scared here. Somebody say, amen, I'm terrified.
Amen, I'm terrified.
Yeah, that was March 2001. And it was a couple of months later after, you know, I don't, how do they reach these decisions? I mean, is it mescaline? Is it acid? Is it meth? I mean, or are these, I mean, just good old fashioned get liquored up and do something stupid kind of things? A couple of months later, you know, the reports slip out because this wasn't supposed to get out. Yes, we tested our missile defense system and we succeeded. The missile defense system works. Okay, well, that's the part you were supposed to hear. You weren't supposed to hear the part about how the reason that it worked was they put a homing beacon on the missile that they wanted to shoot down, and they put a receiver on the missile that they were shooting at it. Huh. Edith. No, really. That's how they shot the missile down. And then it comes out a little bit later that, yeah, they hit one of the missiles that had a homing beacon in it with one of the missiles that had the receiver on it so that it could home on it. But like five others, they missed. With a homing beacon on the missile, they missed. You know, it's like going duck hunting and having the duck tied to the dog. Gemini.
The United States is considering all its options, including the possibility of shooting down the missile if the Koreans fire it.
Oh, God, I think it's too early for hard liquor. They're going to shoot down the Korean missile. I got it. You know, and George, you know, George will be there with a flight suit on or his Space Command uniform or, you know, Junior Johnny Jump Jet. Gee, Commander Johnny, gonna shoot down the missile? That's right, we're gonna shoot it down with my brand new missile defense system. Look at this, it only cost $158 billion. Now see, I'm gonna press this button here, and we're gonna shoot down that missile over there. Is the radio on the missile? What do you mean the radio ain't on the missile? How in the hell am I supposed to shoot the missile down with my missile if the radio ain't on another missile? Did you not? I thought I told you to send Kim Jong-il that memorandum. Put the radio on your missile so we can shoot it down. What do you mean you don't have his email address? KimJongIl@yahoo.com. Damn, I got to do everything around here. Going to shoot down the missile. Yes, Lord, yes, and we're going to achieve peace with honor in Iraq. And it's going to be Frisbees and Wheat Checks for everybody. These people are desperate. These people are desperate. Anti-Iraqi insurgents. I know, I shouldn't laugh. It's all tragic. But I come back to what we talk about time and time and time and time again, because, you know, every now and then I catch myself thinking that we're dealing with evil geniuses, and then I come around, nope, common, stupid street thugs. I'm going to shoot down their missile. I mean, I know, missiles are pretty big things. Compared in size, say, to, you know, you, me, and the dog. But when you know, the grand scope of something going up into the atmosphere and coming back down through the atmosphere, and needle in a haystack is too big. I mean, this is the cowboy mentality. Looky here, I got me a half a dollar, and I'm going to shoot it down with my six gun. Somebody throw the dollar up in the air. Okay, throw a can. All right, throw a brick. Launch a balloon. I'll shoot the balloon. That's what I'll do. Because I'm a cowboy. And cowboys can always do trick shooting. That's what we're going to do. We're going to trick shooting. We're going to trick shoot down Kim Jong-il's missile.
Why, yes, Mr. President. Has anybody gotten the president his medicine today?
Why haven't you gotten the president his medicine? Can't you see he's talking about shooting balloons? Got the best prescription drug plan on the planet. We can't even keep him on his Xanax long enough to keep him from trying to shoot down missiles. Who put that out there to the Associated Press anyway? Lord God. The stupidity. But, you know, of course, they'll claim, because here's how it works out. The North Koreans will fire the rocket, which is basically, it's like three scuds with a rubber band around it. based on the reading I've done, what I understand of it. Three scuds and a rubber band and a real whomper of a warhead on the top. Oh, it could carry a nuclear warhead. Well, you know, it could carry Pee Wee Herman into space. But really, it's based on the Scud missile design. Not exactly textbook for, you know, guided missiles. But what'll happen, they'll put it up, it'll crash somewhere in the Sea of Japan. And then the Bush administration will come out and say, oh, well, we have successfully shot down the missile with our missile defense system. Am I that far off base? The thing is, you can sit here and listen to me and go, yeah, they do that. And I'm just, you know, I'm just fooling. I'm just playing. Oh, yeah, they could do it. Yeah, they'd do that. They'd watch the, oh, yeah, okay, Mr. President, it's crashed. Look, we shot it down. So, you know, we're going to look for that sometime in the coming week. I mean, after all, we're claiming that we can tell when they're fueling the rocket. We can tell when they're fueling the rocket, and we couldn't tell that a trailer behind a couple of palm trees was a popsicle stand and not a mobile weapons lab. Well, sir, our analysts indicate that those are either weapons of mass destruction or fudgesicles. We are in the grips of goons and goobers and fools, drunks, drug addicts, madmen. Let's take a break. God, don't shoot the missile down. When we come back, your phone calls are welcome. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. You know me. You know, I go out and shoot a couple of missiles down for breakfast every day. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Good day, everybody. On this week's Fourth Estate, we have a very candid interview with the one, the...
Hi, you've reached the Johnsons. We're not available to take your call. If you're calling about the apartment for rent, please leave your name and number after the beep, and someone will get back to you.
Hi, my name is Sanjay Rana. I would like to make an appointment to see the apartment.
Oh, hi, this is Robin DiPaola, and I'm calling about the apartment. Please give me a call back at 2...
Hello, this is Rafael Paredes. Please call me back at 718.
This is Jeannie Chu. I'd like to talk to you about the apartment. If you can please call me back.
Hello, my name's Clayton Anderson. I'm calling about the ad in the Sunday paper.
Oh, hello, this is Mrs. Johnson. You must be calling about the apartment.
I am. Is it still available?
Well, you're the first person to call about it. Are you available?
Housing discrimination of all kinds is illegal in the U.S. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello. Can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hello, Mrs. Johnson. Let's see, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hello.
And as you know, he's African-American like you, so you can trust him.
And that's important, because here's the low monthly payment and interest rate you were promised, and here's where it triples. Plus, we buried a balloon payment in there, so you'll need another loan just to pay that off.
Another loan?
But we'll keep giving you loans.
Until we eventually take all the equity you had in your house, leaving you with absolutely nothing.
What? But don't worry, we're going to sell you credit life insurance. You don't really need it, but we sell it at 5 times the cost.
Which puts a ton of cash in our pockets.
Wait, whoa. Don't get up. You look nervous.
Ooh, we better hurry up and get you to sign, or if you don't, I can pretend to ruin your credit with one phone call.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
Minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. And a reminder for you, coming up in not too long at all, what I hope will be something very special, a conversation. Frankly, you're not likely to hear on a lot of other programs just because a lot of other programs exist during the daytime. A conversation with Army First Lieutenant Aaron Watata, the officer who has had the moral courage and stomach to stand up and say that the war he was being sent to is wrong and illegal and he refuses to participate. In short, a hero. And I say you're not likely to hear from him during daytime shows because the Army so fears Lieutenant Watata that they have forbidden him from speaking during duty hours. They have stripped him of his First Amendment rights during any times during which he might be considered on duty. So he will be joining us shortly. I look forward to it. I hope you do, too. Straight to the phones. Jethro is with us. Hey, Jethro, how you doing? Good to hear from you.
Bob.
What's happening?
Listen while I whip this out.
Yeah,
it's madness. I mean, how bad can it get? Watching the news tonight, they've already got a new Emmanuel Goldstein. I think this guy's a completely manufactured, that's about the only thing made in the USA now.
Yeah, well, he's the max headroom of terrorists, isn't he?
I think so. It's, Max Dowry, big hitter, Babe Ruthie or something like that,
Right.
But now they're trying to say that, hey, he went down and he personally butchered those two soldiers himself just to show everybody how tough he was.
Oh, please.
And I was going, well, if their intelligence is that good, what is up with everything else that's a complete failure? Why can't they, why can't they conduct this this war a little bit better if their intelligence is that good? You know, the answer is that it's because it's completely manufactured. More propaganda.
Yeah, it's a fraud.
And the media is just carrying it, just, and sure, it's outrageous that those two guys were taken, were captured and done that way, but that's what we're doing to them, and if they can get us, they're going to do it back to us. They want, they're out for revenge. We are now the enemy over there.
Well, I wasn't, Jethro, neither you nor I were responsible for putting out statements that said that, Alberto Gonzalez said it best, didn't he? The Geneva Conventions are quaint.
That's right.
So, and, they know that. They know what our position is. They are fighting fire with fire.
Yes, and they know about the tortures and everything else, and so now they're going to have the public screaming over two American soldiers when there's could be over 100,000 Iraqi civilians killed. Come on, I mean that's it's insanity gone mad.
Yeah,
you can't get it. You can't make something up crazier than that.
No, that's the thing. You can't. I mean, it's not, there are evenings, Jethro, it's tough for me to get behind this microphone because in any sane world, any of the stuff that I was talking about, it would be absolute utter fiction. And I'm not talking about me riffing on George Bush shooting at missiles. I'm talking about the idea of this war, this administration, this economy. This is all stuff from a bad movie.
It is. It's a bad dream, but unfortunately, after Bush is gone, Bush and Cheney are both gone, collecting those million still from Daddy Warbucks, we're going to be suffering, and our children and grandchildren are also going to be suffering. So, and they were busting on Clinton, tax and spend, tax and spend, tax and spend. Well, so what is it now?
Spend it. Yeah, spend and spend.
Yeah, so I just don't get it. And they're trying to... now we got the personal destruction on Representative Murtha, and they're trying to destroy Senator Kerry again over their stances. Everything's cut and run.
Yeah, but there's no such thing as cut and run. There's no such thing as timetables. There's no such thing as standing down when they stand up. There's only one question: when do we leave?
That's exactly right. And the cut and run. It was said, it was said over a year ago by the military that there's not going to be a military victory for the United States over there. It's just not going to happen. There's no clear-cut military victory in a guerrilla war and an insurgency like this. And it has to be done politically through diplomacy, and none of that seems to be going on. We want our henchmen in there, somebody that we can control like puppets. And we're going to still be running the show. And I was reading where, we're going to have 50,000 or over troops there forever. It's going to be like the permanent occupation. But on the other hand, they're saying, oh, there's going to be no permanent bases. We're not staying there. But I foresee a long stay.
Well, I don't see how you can foresee anything but. We're so screwed, Jethro. We're just so screwed.
And this deal, and then they come up with this gas in the subway deal. And there's no proof of that. There's no hard evidence, and yet they're going to go ahead and start spewing at us as some kind of, they just called it off. Well, why did they just call it off? Well, because it was never planned. They called it off because they couldn't kill enough people.
Well, look. I mean, we know what happened with that cult that let go of some gas in the Tokyo subways. What, they killed 30 people?
I don't know how much. It was sarin gas.
Right, and I mean, 30 people is awful, but that's not, that's not a nuclear device going off. And I'm not downplaying 30 people, but poison gas is not that effective. I was having this conversation with my dad the other day. Yeah, you know, we didn't stop using, and I'm talking about the Japanese, the Germans, the Americans, whomever, didn't stop using chemical weapons in the Second World War because we decided we were going to wage a nicer war. We did it because if you use chemical weapons, you are as likely to kill your own as you are to kill the other side. And we learned that in the trenches of France in the First World War.
Right. You got to have humanitarian killing, Bob. Come on.
Yeah.
But this gas deal, you know, they were saying, well, we got this information because we've got an insider in Al-Qaeda. You know, we didn't, you know, we were told before we didn't have one, but now, yes, there is one inside Al-Qaeda. Well, if we've got an insider inside Al-Qaeda, then, you know.
Well, see, that's
up with that, tip off on 911, you know.
Well, but that's the raison d'etre for that whole rumor, Jethro, is to make, I mean, it's nothing but, it's not intended for us, except for the stupid gullible people who put plastic on their windows and duct tape and, you know, all that crap.
Well,
it's intended to try to make Al-Qaeda think that they've got a mole within their system. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, they don't.
I understand. I read a story about this Canadian deal, too. Mm-hmm. One of the ringleaders in this is a former Canadian military guy. And they're thinking, you know, he infiltrated and kind of, you know, talked them all into doing some kind of crazy scheme and busted them. You know, the big sting, because the military was the guys holding the explosives that they were going to buy. So, you know, and that died down real quick, too. You don't hear much about that anymore. That's kind of gone under the thing. But since the election, there's been no color code warnings. You notice that?
Well, since Tom Ridge left, there haven't been, you know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that, you know, that this is going to replace that. This cut and run, the fear of something going nuts over there if we happen to leave, which is not going to happen. It's like Martha says, hey, you know, the Iraqis got rid of Zarqawi. You know, it was from inside information.
Yeah, and it wasn't because they loved the United States.
Right, and Al-Qaeda is not going to take over because they're going to get rid of them. They want those guys out of there so they can fight it out, you know, amongst themselves. All three factions will want those guys out and then start fighting among themselves. So it seems like what they're trying to do as an end result, you know, the bidding of Israel is to keep it, you know, just like Korea and Vietnam, partition it. And over in Bosnia, so, you know, there's going to be three sections over there when this ends up.
Well, yeah, very, very likely there will be.
And it seems like that's what they're hoping for.
But that's a regal attitude, Jethro. It's a, you know, it's a white man's burden kind of attitude that says we know better than you do.
Right. Yeah, we're going to take. Yeah, well, you know, the British Empire.
Yeah. Well, when the Ottomans fell at the end of the First World War, left to their own devices, the area that is now Iraq and Saudi Arabia and Jordan and all of Syria would probably have divided itself along natural, political, and sociological lines.
Right. And then you hear these stories of the death squads and stuff like that, and I'm reading, I can't remember where it was, whatreallyhappened.com or something like that. This colonel who was so effective, you know, down in Nicaragua and down in Central America with the death squad training and carrying out the death squad, he's over in Iraq now operating. I can't think of what his name is, Colonel something. So I'm not sure what's going on over there. You know, we had death squads in Vietnam as well, you know, Operation Phoenix where we're killing everybody. So who knows really what's going on, you know, on over there? Who knows? When was the last time you saw or heard anything about Fallujah? Any pictures? Anything?
No. The last time I heard the word Fallujah mentioned was a statement that said Ramadi is the new Fallujah.
Right. And Martha said that the people in Fallujah, the Iraqis, they consider, you know, what they've done as a military victory. And now, yeah, now we've got Ramadi surrounded. And we're going to go in there and kill a bunch of people. And the end result is going to be what for us?
There is no end result. If we, again, Jethro, if we don't start having a conversation that says, "How do we get out now?" then everything else is just window dressing. It's crap. It's rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah, but the road plan is to take all of that you know, take any kind of common sense approach and any realistic approach and turn that into it's cut and run. Wait and see. They're going to try to turn everything the Democrats do into cut and run.
Well, you know, of course. Yeah, look at the comments. You know, now the right wing's out there defending Ann Coulter now, saying, "Well, she didn't call for Murtha to be fragged." But the interviewer from rightwingnews.network.com or whatever the hell they call it asked her, "What about John Murtha?" And her answer was, "The reason they invented fragging."
Right. Well, Coulter is just, I don't know, she's, to me, she's like some kind of professional wrestling figure, you know, the guy.
Stop.
Yeah, you know, it's the guy that, you know, everybody loves to hate. They're just promoting her, and she's out there doing that. I don't know if she means half of that stuff. But she knows that all this hate and stuff gets attention. And a bunch of these right-wing so-called Christians lap that hate stuff. They lap it up, especially when it's directed towards liberals. The liberals.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, as a liberal, Jethro, how many children do you eat a day?
Pardon me?
As a liberal, you know, how many children do you eat a day? I try to eat 3 or 4 children a day.
Countless. You know, like, you know, exponential advance on the gingerbread house or whatever.
Yeah, come here, my pretty.
Come on in here and test the fire for me. So, yeah, so Coulter, it's part, you know, it's almost like they're all on the payroll. Coulter.
They are all on the payroll.
Hannity. You know, they're all working for some goal. But I don't think they're going to like the end result of it. I don't think a lot of people are going to like the end result. You know, the prices are going to go up for us. You know, I think this housing boom is going on the way down. The dollar's lost, what, 35% of its value? I mean, it's what, 130 against the euro now?
Yeah, something, yeah.
But then they want to holler how great the economy's doing, how good Bush is doing, and keeping those tax cuts permanent.
Well, I mean,
people laughing it up.
Have you? I mean, I was in Lowe's not too long back. Have you priced any of that stuff over there lately? It's going through the roof. Transportation costs, and most of it's in Iraq.
Right.
But right. You know, we can't be bothered with that. We're too busy watching other stuff.
Yes.
And that's, you know, that's what
talking
that's
talking about the next American Idol competition.
Oh, sure.
Or something like that, or you know. We're talking about how hateful Ann Coulter is. Everything, all this stuff is a diversion from what's really going on. And I'm sorry, but the American people have grown accustomed to be entertained.
Above all things, we want to be entertained. That's what I meant a little bit ago when I said, you know, we don't have conversation. You know, there's no, you know, houses aren't built with front porches on them anymore.
Right. Like, I don't know, years ago, you used to have an event, and you'd go there, and I don't know, the event went on. There was no entertainment, no musicians, no, you know, no entertainment there to be entertained. But now, if you go to some kind of an event, you know, entertainment provided by, like, you have to be entertained by something.
Yeah.
You have, you know, put them inside.
The Lincoln-Douglas debates, Jethro. Stephen Douglas and Abraham Lincoln spoke for 3 hours apiece, I think it was. Can you imagine turning George Bush, or to be fair, John McCain, or John Kerry? Oh, no, not John Kerry. But can you imagine turning any of those people loose to talk for 3 hours? I mean, the cloture rule in the Senate with regard to filibusters exists because we don't have orators and statesmen anymore in the Senate. They can't talk for 3 hours, let alone 24.
Yeah, well, I put them up against Senator Byrd, and put my money on Byrd any day of the week.
Well, he is of a former generation. You know, I don't know if Russ Feingold could talk for 3 hours or six or eight or ten. There is, I mean, we are in a crisis of leadership in this country because, and you know that when you see things like people talk, you know, because they're afraid that they're going to get called ugly names by Ann Coulter, that they have to talk about, well, you know, we need a timetable. Well, you know, Hillary the other day said, on the one hand, I don't believe in timetables. On the other hand, I don't believe in this reckless open-ended war that Bush. Well, then, okay, Hillary, what do you believe in, honey?
Yes, I can't. I dread the thought of Hillary being the candidate because I do not see how she can win. I just think there's going to be another bout of personal destruction and Bill and Hillary or Bill rumors. I mean, to the max. I wish they would find.
Well, what was it? 2 weeks ago, the New York Times had a long speculative piece of garbage about the Clintons have not slept together in 14 months. Yeah, some stupid bunch of crap. Like, yeah, who cares? And it's in the New York Times.
Well, I must, in all fairness, I must give it to the Democrats because they've come out with this, you know, Laura's moved into some hotel in Condi and George or...
Yeah.
Could be a third party in that, too.
Yeah.
Like the old days.
Jeff Gannon.
Talon
News Service.
Yeah, but I think it goes back a lot further than that.
Victor, you know? What's her name? Leona McConnell from
right.
Nevada says that, Atlanta, Georgia, 1984, Victor Ashe, George Bush, and herself.
You also read it was common knowledge in at Yale where he had this black transvestite friend, I believe. I saw a picture of those two together on the internet. Back in the old college days, so who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what happens when a daddy shuns his son?
Right, that's what, yeah. I mean, you go back into the psychobabble of all this, and suddenly, as heinous as most of it may be, it's all understandable. It's all explainable. Jethro, thanks so much, man, for everything. So good to hear from you. You doing all right?
Yeah, doing good. Need to go to the Rock.
Need to go to the Rock. It's about that time. You have a good night, all right?
All right, you too. Bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
And onward to Luke. Hey, Luke, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I tell you what, it's interesting watching this Republican smokescreen they've been working up these last few days. The story I was enjoying was this one, if you have to hunt for it, was finding this the day that Dear Leader went over to Iraq, this cable that apparently came out of Iraq, where essentially the Iraqi ambassadors essentially are going, oh dear, we're in deep trouble. And it goes on for like 24 items or something.
Yeah, 24 bullet points. It's horrifying.
And it's like, this came out the same day that Dear Leader's going over, so what gets the press? You know, and then we turn around, we have this thing where they have this the vote thing they had in the House, and one of the little stories that's kind of slipping through is all of a sudden this piece of thing that came out of the Pentagon that's 74 pages, that's talking points that apparently the White House asked to have made, but amazingly enough somebody in the Pentagon actually even sent it to some Democrats, and they're crying, wait a minute, you aren't allowed by law to do this. I mean, you can't use them to push some item. You can't use the military, you know, or the Pentagon to push some item you're pushing for in Congress. So, you know, I mean, they put out this thing. Oh, where was it? I hit the paper a minute ago.
Laws? We don't need no stinking laws.
Mm-hmm. What was it? Amid Iraqi debate, a document mystery. This is over on ABC News. It says, political talking points from Pentagon office may have been illegal. On June 15th, talking about this thing, it's like a 74-page document is a rebuttal of criticisms of the war and a defense of the administration's conduct of the war. And it's one of these things where, you know, down here they say, let's see. The Pentagon later said the document was produced by the National Security Council, but it did not offer an explanation as to why it was sent out by the Office of the Secretary of Defense. So... But you know what I mean? It's, well,
yeah.
They're not allowed to do.
No.
I mean, they're told, you know, this is something you cannot get involved with. If you guys are administrative over in the military, you cannot get involved in the legislative. That's a no-no.
Well, you know, it's that. No. There's a crowd over there in the Pentagon that hates that whole idea of civilian control of the military.
Oh, I tell you. It's weird, though, can you consider the fact that's what they have half the time, though, is you're sitting there with Rumsfeld deciding he knows better than people that have been doing it for 30 years. Oh, yeah, I know, you know. Like, he knew, oh, yeah, we don't need that many people. We need lighter arms.
Well, you know how it is with Rumsfeld. You know, I was evil when evil wasn't cool.
Well, you know, it's like somebody said, you know, said, isn't it amazing if you look at the Bush administration? It's like, dear God, it's like you think you're having an acid flashback. Isn't this 20 years ago? It's like, God, no. All these people were in power and all of them were convicted of things, weren't they?
Yeah. You know, John Negroponte. I mean, there was no shame at the opening of the administration. It was John Negroponte, the William Poindexter.
Oh, I tell you, the one that got me was, and talking about today, sitting there, and they were talking about the two soldiers that were killed, and talking about torture and all this. And I said, well, you got to wonder, was it Al Qaeda or was some of Death Squad John's boys that got to them?
Well, I mean, this look, you know, they found the replacement of al-Zarqawi, and he had to go out and do. No, see, all along, this has been in the works. If they could get if they could have gotten their hands on an American soldier sooner, they would gladly have done so. This was, you know, whoever put it out that this was in retaliation for Zarqawi, that's a lie. That's a bunch of baloney. This was nothing. No. These guys were stand-ins for George W. Bush, period.
Well, you know, it's one of those things. It's like you said, I didn't hear the first part of your show, sorry, but it's like, say, this is Max Headroom. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm surprised, you know, it's like, say, I'm surprised his image doesn't flicker. It's like, he's not real. You know, it's like Al Zarqawi. You know, I mean, he was just a hood that they everybody talked him up to the point where everybody thought, well, he's important. It's like, no, he was just at the wrong place at the wrong time. And got his picture took. You know, he was the...
Well, if that was him.
Well, you know, it's like, what's the old, there's an old Chevy Chase film. Is it? It's not Foul Play. But it's the one where he's in the bank robbery and just happens to look up at the camera at the wrong time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that. He wasn't, you know, Al Zarqawi probably wouldn't do anything. He was just the one that looked up at the security camera at the wrong time.
Well, but, you know, I mean, we go back. The story existed in the past about how they had a chance to get him before they started the war, but they didn't kill him because it would have been bad for the justification for the war. And all the stuff that, I mean, they made a mythology that they couldn't deal with him, Luke. It was, I know I didn't just see this somewhere along the way. They put him forward as a one-legged man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they had all these rumors out there. They were popping out about him. Then turns around, he's the one that apparently was doing the worst of it. I mean, he's the one that was pitting the Sunnis against the Shia. Now all of a sudden they were like, oh God, we got to get him. It's like, well, we had him, and we were the ones that made him this. And that turns out he's the one that was doing the worst of the killing in that respect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, when it was one against the other, that's fine. But he was the one going civil, starting the Civil War part of it. It's like, well, congratulations. We had some real fun there, didn't we?
Yeah, and we've forgotten Muqtada al-Sadr.
Oh, gosh. He's still out and about. And then it's like they were sitting there going, why didn't we grab this guy? I mean, you know, maybe somewhere on his phone, we maybe could have found that speed dial to some little cave over in Pakistan. You know, that maybe we could have figured out some way to track it.
Well, and you know, it's the other stuff we don't pay attention to. The south of Iraq has gotten out of control too, and if I remember correctly,
that's British area, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's Sadr's people. Mm-hmm. Female physicians have been killed.
Yeah,
for being female physicians.
Well, I mean, you know, and now it's like say. All of a sudden, now they're all having to. Most of the women are starting to have to wear the burqas and the whole nine yards. Because I mean, essentially, and the thing was, Iraq wasn't that way before the war. You know, I mean, Iraq was not modern, but you know what I mean. It was not that secular. I mean, not that overly religious. Now they're getting to the point now where if the women don't put all the gear on, they'll be killed.
Well, that cable from the U.S. Embassy included an account of a woman who has to come to work in a full abaya now, complete with everything covered but her eyes, because she's been threatened for, you know, showing her demon skin or something.
Have a member of the family walk with her, essentially.
Yeah. Little children, you know, little boy children are not allowed to play in short pants anymore, because the crazies will kill the little boys for wearing short pants. A couple of members of the Iraqi tennis team were killed because they were playing, you know, they were wearing short pants.
Imagine playing tennis in shorts. God, who would ever think of that?
Oh, God almighty. This is, you know, we've opened the door for every kind of backwardness that this that the religion industry fundamentalist freaks have to offer. And I'm not gooning on Islam. And when I talk about freaks in this country, I'm not gooning on Christianity or people who truly try to follow the teachings of Yeshua.
Yeah.
But because the world over, religion is the single greatest engine for achieving social control. And the thing is, the fun part is, you can kill somebody and say, well, you know, they weren't doing God's word.
It's like, you know, which God and which part of it do you think it is? You know, it's like, every religion's got so many subdivisions and, you know, and everything nowadays, you don't know what, you know, one group's against the other just because one uses the left hand and one uses the right hand.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it gets that silly. The Greek Orthodox cross themselves from right to left, and the Catholics go from left to right, and they're each heretics in the eyes of the other.
I know. Oh, one thing I wanted to remind you of, just in case Gladys wants to turn on the VCR or something, I guess, I don't know if it's now up your way, but here in about 10 minutes, they're about to have that Frontline thing, The Dark Side, about Dick Cheney's involvement with the War on Terror and the Iraqi War.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like I say, this is stuff we've all seen before, but I just didn't know if y'all wanted to tape it, just in case you might get some good little blurbs off of it.
Well, maybe during the break we can go in and slam something into the tape deck and pick it up. Luke, I got to roll on. I got to get a call in before Lieutenant Watata joins us.
Have a good evening.
You take care now.
Bye.
And onward to Jim. Jim, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I had a nightmare this afternoon. I took a nap, and I had a dream that Ann Coulter and Nancy Grace got together, and they were doing lesbionics.
Ba-dum-bum.
Now, I want to tell you something that I said earlier this afternoon, and I'm going to get off. You know, I don't think we have any exit strategy from Iraq because we don't want to leave Iraq, or they don't want us to leave Iraq. I mean, you mentioned the fact that we're building 14 megaforts over there, right?
Yeah.
Well, we are investing that country, and we're going to make it our 51st state. And we're going to be there until the last drop of blood is shed and the last barrel of oil is gone. I really believe that is the purpose. Any talk of withdrawal, schedule, or immediate is simply you know, something that's a political football they're going to be tossing around.
Well, you're implicating a pretty broad swath of American body politic in that, Jim. I mean, when you say they don't want to get out, I mean, does that include the people who say, "Oh, well, we got to have a timetable"? I mean, there's people out there, you know, there's Democrats saying, "Well, you know, okay, cut and run, but we got to have a timetable. We got to have a timetable."
Why are we building the forts, Bob?
I know.
I mean, you know, listen, they've got those people over there building these hamlets or strategic hamlets or fortresses at periodic things that are designed to maintain control of the country. I mean, Hitler used the same strategy or would have used the same strategy had he won in Russia. He was going to do the same thing. He was going to have the whole area of the Eastern Soviet Union controlled by a series of strategic fortresses, not unlike the ones we're building in Iraq. And that's going to be the purpose there. They, you know, who are we building them for?
We're not building them for the Iraqi army.
Well, we're building them for our army. I mean, now can you argue with that?
No, I can't argue with that. I think you're correct. Now, but the question becomes, for me, as someone,
withdrawal is immaterial. That's just something they're playing around with. They're holding that in front of people like a carrot in front of a carrot on a stick.
Well, see, George Bush told a big old honking lie after he went over there last week, Jim. He came out and said, he came back and said, you know, the Iraqi people don't want a timetable. The Iraqi prime minister, when he was invited to an audience with his holiness, the Bush, told him face to face, you know, when are you going to set a timetable? And George just lied about it.
Well, that's because there is no sign table.
They want us out.
Well, he don't want us out. And we're building all those fortresses over there. And I think Halliburton has a contract, correct? Or
yeah.
Somebody does, like that. Well, if we're building, you know, they had the same type of strategy in Vietnam. It was called the strategic hamlet strategy. This is a strategic hamlet, policy to powers of 10. We're going to build mega fortresses over there, and we're going to have these garrisons placed, and they're going to be garrisoned by American troops in order to invest and hold that country and to seize upon the oil reserve that it, you know, possesses. And I think that's what the big game plan for the neocons is. Now, I may be wrong, and I hope that I am. But that's the way I felt about it all along, ever since I've discovered that they were building permanent installations and an embassy larger than the one we have in Great Britain.
Well,
the largest embassy in the world.
Yeah. Well, it's one of Saddam's the one we're in is one of Saddam's palaces.
I mean, why are we putting all these structures and things like that over there? And why are we building these fortresses? And, you know, to me, that speaks volumes over what any politician might say in the Senate.
So I guess the next question becomes, Jim, one of, is it possible for enough of a groundswell of demanding that we be done with this misadventure? Is it possible for the American people to get us out, even if the neocons don't want to?
No, I don't think so.
So we just keep bleeding.
Effectively, yes.
Because it's not the neocons' families going over there.
I mean, Bob, look, what are you going to do? You're going to have a revolution in the streets of Washington? I don't think so. The Army's going to take orders and march to do what it's told. Let's be realistic here.
Well, I like to think that the anti-Vietnam rallies and demonstrations had something to do with the end of that affair.
Yeah, but I don't think we have the same type of people alive now that we did then, or the same type of spirit. I really don't think so.
Well, or people...
Like we don't have the same generation now that we have when we went to into World War II. I just think we've become such a nation of sheep, and I've heard all your people talk about watching American Idol and this, that, and the other, and being content to just go along, get along, that, you know, they're just going to accept it as a fait accompli and just see what happens.
And as long as it's not your little kid, as long as it's not the kid you raised from the cradle. No, I understand, and it's a depressing way to view things, Jim.
I mean, looking at it very hardly, none of these people are in Iraq in the eyes of the military because they were forced to go there. Or what I mean is they signed up and they knew that going there was part of the deal. They broke, you know, once you take the, you know, sign your name on the line, your ass is theirs. You take the incentives, and you take the student loan, you take the education benefits, you take whatever benefits it offers you. And, of course, once you've done that, you've sold your soul to them. And you have an MSO, or military service obligation, and you have to go. If not, you're going to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. That's just the way the law reads.
Well, here in a couple of minutes, right after the top of the hour news, we'll be talking to one young man who was brave enough and moral enough and conscientious enough to opt out.
Well, you know, so, in the eyes of so many people now, this isn't Jim talking. This is just Jim being observant. There are so many people who are going to say, this guy is a refusenik. You know?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just calling it like I see it, bad or good.
Yeah, and, well, you know, the refuseniks in Israel have become a little... There's a little hero status attached to them now, so you know, maybe Lieutenant Watada is the beginning of something. Jim, we've got to roll onto the news. We've got to catch it as it comes in. It runs live. So have yourself a great evening. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Yeah.
Bye now. Our good friend Jim from a remote undisclosed location somewhere in the wilds of West Virginia, just like us. When we come back after the news, a conversation with First Lieutenant Aaron Watada. I look forward to it. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yeah. This is the Quality News Network. The U.S. military has recovered the mutilated bodies of two U.S. soldiers who've been missing since Friday. An insurgent group claimed responsibility for the deaths in a web posting, saying it's payback for the death of former Al-Qaeda leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. In Iraq, military investigators say two U.S. soldiers were murdered by Iraqi civil defense officers who were patrolling with them. The two men who were killed in 2004 were originally thought to be killed in an ambush. A full report on the incident will be available tomorrow. In Washington, a defense official says a U.S. missile defense system has been activated. That comes in response to an announcement from North Korea that it's prepared to test a long-range missile. The Associated Press reports that the Bush administration is discussing how to respond, including shooting down the missile if it is launched. In South Korea, the country's foreign minister says it has not been determined whether North Korea has put fuel in the missile. Earlier reports suggested that fueling had already been completed and the missile could be launched at any time. In Washington today, Republican congressional leaders said broad immigration reform legislation is very unlikely to be passed this year. House Speaker Dennis Hastert has called for a series of hearings on the immigration issue, saying it's more important to secure the borders than to provide a path to citizenship for illegal immigrants. In Arizona today, the head of U.S. Customs and Border Protection said building a wall along the Mexican border is not practical. He said new technology and air operations are also needed to control the border, in addition to fencing embedded with sensors and vehicle barriers. In Vienna tomorrow, President Bush will attend a U.S.-European Union summit. He is expected to urge the possibility of sanctions against Iran over its nuclear program and promise to uphold human rights during the war on terror. In New Orleans, 100 National Guard troops, along with 60 state police, arrived today at the mayor's request. An outbreak of violence this weekend killed six people, five of them teenagers. In Sedona, Arizona, fire crews are still trying to control a 1,500-acre wildfire. The blaze started Sunday and has forced the evacuation of 500 homes and businesses. In Central America, large waves from a Pacific storm battered coastal areas of Nicaragua and Guatemala. 20 houses and a small hotel were destroyed. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
The IRS is giving Gulf Coast taxpayers affected by Hurricane Katrina more time to file their tax returns for last year. The agency says they'll have an extra 7 weeks or until October 15th. Unionized nurses have filed a class action lawsuit against some of the largest hospitals in the country. The suit claims hospital administrators have conspired to keep wages low. In May, construction of new homes and apartments increased following three straight months of declines. The Commerce Department credits warmer, dry weather. Merrill Lynch says the number of global millionaires has increased. There are now 8.7 million millionaires worldwide. The largest growth has occurred in the Middle East due to record oil revenues. One of the three major credit bureaus, Equifax, reports an employee's laptop computer was stolen near London. It contained the names and social security numbers of as many as 2,500 employees. In New York, CBS has announced that former anchor Dan Rather has left the network. The 74-year-old journalist had been with CBS News for 44 years. Microsoft has unveiled its newly branded instant messaging system, Windows Live Messenger. It's the first major release Microsoft plans to offer to get more web advertising revenue. The average nationwide price for a gallon of unleaded gasoline is just below $2.90. Light sweet crude settled at $68.94 today. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 33 points, NASDAQ down 3, S&P 500 flat. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Six and a half minutes after the hour as we roll into this third hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. We are awaiting the phone call of Lieutenant Watata. And you know his story, I presume. If you don't, we need all the web traffic we can get to thankult.org. And you have a chance there to add your name and your signature or whatever to his support. The deployment could come as early as day after tomorrow. This is an honorable man. And today is his national, or I mean a week from today, rather, is the National Day of Action among his supporters. So go to thankult.org. And, you know, basically, you know, it's at the top. It's a, thank you for refusing an illegal war. I get the sense this is a young man who took the Nuremberg lecture very seriously. We are joined at this time, and I am honored to have him with us, Lieutenant Aaron Watata. Lieutenant Watata, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Let me first of all welcome you to the program. I'm Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
And just let you know right off the bat how much I admire the stance you've taken. And I was just telling the listening audience about your website, thankult.org. You really are trying to involve people. This is like a little grassroots organizing in a way, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, it's just kind of a chance, I think. Well, a duty on my part, and also something that I feel I need to do to, I guess, make the people of this country more aware of the unlawfulness of this war and the fact that we're forcing our soldiers and members of the military to participate in something that's a crime.
Well, let's do a little background, if you don't mind. When did you join the military?
I joined in March of 2003.
So just as the war was running up, is that right?
Correct. I was still in school at the time. I was working and going to school, and I had thought about joining the military before March. And I still wanted to join because I think, like many Americans out there, I believe the administration when they convinced us on national television that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction and Saddam had strong ties to Al-Qaeda and was responsible for 9/11. So although I didn't feel the war was or invasion was fully justified, I felt that it was enough justification for us to go in and for me to continue joining the military.
Well, you mentioned about the stuff that was put out there for public consumption. So that did play a significant part in your decision to join the military, the events of 9/11, the tie-in that the administration put out there between Saddam and bin Laden, the weapons of mass destruction. So, in essence, and I'm not trying to be cruel or cold, you bought it, right?
Yes, I was bought and sold. And sadly, I think like many people did, including members of Congress, including members of the press. And I share a certain amount of guilt and responsibility for that and the fact that I didn't seek out the truth sooner or speak up sooner.
Well, was there a turning point for you, Lieutenant Watata?
Was there
a turning point for you? You joined in as the war was ginning up.
Mm-hmm.
At what point did the light go on?
It came on about fall of last year. You know, when I came back after being deployed to Korea, being in another country and with another, you know, primary mission, I wasn't really focused on what was going on in Iraq at that time, all the news coming out, current events. But when I did come back, I became more focused on what was going on. I started, and I felt it was my responsibility as an officer and a leader to read up everything I could about what was going on, and then what had led us to that point. And it was shocking to me to find out how this administration had deceived us into going into war, and how they were condoning the actions, you know, the use of torture and mistreatment of the people over during the current occupation.
Well, how did you? You're a commissioned officer, obviously. What kind of MOS do you have?
I'm a field artillery trained officer, and so I can either be working with a straight field artillery unit, or I can be attached to a maneuver, either infantry or armor unit, to assist them.
Yeah, and so just because you're artillery doesn't necessarily mean that that's the job you'll be doing. You would be doing if you went there.
Correct. Correct.
How many men are in your charge?
When I was attached to the maneuver units, I had a team of about 5 men.
Well, let's go back to the beginnings of your resistance. It's my understanding that you tried to resign your commission. Is that correct?
Correct. When I became aware of the things that were going on, and then just the whole immorality and illegality of this war, I felt that I could not. I didn't believe in what was going on, and I couldn't do it according to my obligations to the military, and I couldn't lead or force troops to participate. Something that I was unwilling to do. So I told the military it would be better, I think, for the military as a whole to separate me, let me go. And, you know, I can protest on the outside like all the other civilians. But so I sent in a letter of resignation at the beginning of this year in January, and they would have nothing of it. They said, well, that's fine what you believe, but basically, you know, your commander-in-chief has told you you're going to go, end of story.
Well, that seems to make no sense to me, if you'll forgive my saying so, not from your end, but from their end. Why would you want to compel someone to participate in a war who was already convinced of its illegality? I mean, do you have any idea what's going on inside the military's head? Are they afraid of you? Are they hoping to make an example of you?
You know, at first, I think the idea of our administration betraying the trust of the people, condoning illegal acts, the whole illegality of it is very foreign to many people within the military, especially those senior officers, people who have been in for a long time. You know, a lot of them really believe strongly in that authority from above and that they can do no wrong. So I think when I brought it up to my commander, he didn't even take it up to a very high level. He kind of just told his boss, and then that was kind of it. And so they kind of disregarded it, thought that maybe they can talk me into it, convince me into going. They told me numerous times, well, you're a quality officer. We want you to come with us. But, you know, you're maybe a little misguided, but we can bring you back. And talking about your obligation and your commitment to your soldiers and things like that.
Well, Lieutenant Watada, I throw this phrase around, illegal war. I've heard it a lot from my side of the debate. When you say, it probably means a little bit different than what it means coming out of my mouth. When you, as someone who has been through, I assume, officer candidate school and all the training that goes with that, when you, as a commissioned officer in the United States military, say illegal war, what precisely do you mean?
Illegal war in the sense that it's violating American law. It's violating these international treaties that we signed, the Nuremberg Principles, and the UN mandate that basically says any war that is initiated not out of necessity is a war of aggression. And it's a violation. It's a crime against peace. It's a crime against humanity. It's a war crime. And the Constitution strictly says that any international treaty we sign becomes American law. And also, you know, the occupation in itself is violating the Army's laws of land warfare.
How so?
The mistreatment of detainees, the indiscriminate killing of civilians, the targeting of medical facilities, shutting off water and medical supplies, electricity.
Things that would be necessary to the ongoing life of a non-combatant population.
Laying siege to cities. When you know there's non-combatants in that city, basically, you know, Fallujah, just using... non-conventional weapons. All of it is violations of the Geneva Convention, the Hague Convention, and all of it are violations of the 1996 U.S. War Crimes Act. And also, you know, as an occupying force, any force, any indigenous forces that we train, including these militia-infiltrated Iraqi security forces, all the crimes that they're committing are the responsibility of the occupying force under the laws of land warfare.
So it kind of rolls downhill back to us.
Exactly.
Now, as an officer, you swore an oath.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask this from a position of complete ignorance.
Sure.
In swearing that oath, did you swear that oath to the commander in chief, or did you swear that oath to the Constitution of the United States?
I swore to the Constitution of the United States. There are two different oaths. One is the oath of enlistment, which all enlisted people take. And then the oath of an officer, or oath of office. Both oaths say, the first thing it says in that oath is, I will protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And to me, that means you uphold the laws and the ideals of democracy. In the oath of enlistment, it says that I will, of course, obey the orders of the commander-in-chief and all those appointed over me. Now, it doesn't say that for the oath of an officer. And I think they made that distinction because officers have that higher responsibility to really look into every order, you know, including that order to go to war, and evaluate whether they can follow it according to their obligation to the Constitution.
And you, of course, you mentioned earlier the Nuremberg principles. Every soldier of any stripe gets at least some training in the concept of illegal orders and what one must or may do in the face of one of those. What is your understanding of that, given your training and your indoctrination?
There's very, very little focus on it, and especially I think the view is if you go to combat, a lot of those things are thrown out the window. And I think that's why you see these things like Haditha and Abu Ghraib come out, because there just isn't that much focus on committing, you know, acts of humane acts. While you're in a combat zone, and there's just more of the focus is on respect to authority, and whatever they tell you to do, right or wrong, you're going to execute it no matter what.
Is that the mindset that you see among your brothers in arms in the officer corps?
Yes, exactly.
And are you a lone wolf? Is there any dissent? Are there people like you who are afraid to take a stance as bold as yours?
Yes, I've received numerous emails from members of the Army all around the country and the world, giving me their support and agreement in what I'm saying, my beliefs.
Now, I'm sure one of the arguments out there from the military brass is that, well, you know, if we let Lieutenant Watada get away with it, then all the officers will feel free to question any order coming down from above.
I don't think that's the case. I'm not questioning every order. I'm just questioning this order that I've been given to deploy to an illegal war. And certainly every officer has that obligation to evaluate every order they're given for its legality and truthfulness.
So just to be clear, if they came back and said, look, you know, what they told you earlier, you're a good officer, you're solid guy, we want to keep you in the military, we promise we'll never send you to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do then?
You know, that's however unlikely that's going to be.
And I admit it's unlikely.
Right. You know, then I would continue to serve out the rest of my commitment. And certainly when I turned in my letter of resignation, I thought they would offer that to me. To say, well, okay, you know, you're still a quality officer. Right. We don't want you going to the combat zone if this is not what you really believe in. You know, stay here, train soldiers, continue doing your job until, you know, your commitment runs out. Or whatever you want to do. But there is that whole thing, well, we told you to do this, and you're going to do it no matter what. And like you said, if you don't do that, then it's a precedent. But there is a dangerous precedent that if you don't allow people within the military to act upon their conscience, to do the right thing, you know, according to their moral code, then a lot of people on the outside, a lot of people within the military will look at that and say, well, I really don't have a choice. I'm forced to participate in things that I don't agree with, and why would I want to stay in an institution like that?
Well, I read a story the other day about a young man, an enlisted man, who went so far as to use illegal drugs in order to have a bad urine screen
right.
to keep from going back.
I read about that same story, that a Marine.
Yes. Yes. I would think that that is evidence of the depth to which the resistance of this war is growing. When people will leave their homes, leave their countries, put things in their body that they otherwise wouldn't put in their body, this tells me that there is a moral crisis within the military structure. Do you see that as well?
Certainly. I think there is a moral crisis, and I just want to put it out there. If this war was so just, if it was so much of a war of defending our national security and defending our families, then what I'm doing would really have no bearing. I mean, they could acquit me, find me not guilty, and really nobody would follow in my footsteps. Everybody would be continually picking up arms and joining the army to go fight this war or in Iraq or against terrorism, as they say, or Islamofascism. Certainly, I think if our shores were invaded this minute, every young man, old man would pick up arms and rush to defend our country. But obviously, that's not the case with this war and not the case with our military.
Well, you just used a magic word there, Lieutenant Watata, Islamofascism. Can you tell us a little bit about the level of indoctrination that exists for that kind of stuff? We've heard about recruits being trained to refer to the indigenous peoples there as Hajis.
Right.
You just said Islamofascism. How much of this kind of jingoism goes on within preparation to go there?
You know, in my unit, honestly, I haven't faced much of that. A lot of the term Hajis came from the guys who came back from Iraq the first time, and it's carried over to the new recruits coming into the unit. And it is a derogatory term. It's also a term just to refer to Iraqis or Arabs, I guess. But Islamofascism, I think that's a term of the right wing, the people who support this administration, right or wrong, and the people who support this war, right or wrong. And it's an ideology that comes in with people who I think, you know, respond to that.
Well, obviously, you know, you're not messing with some low grade outfit. Yeah, you're playing with the big boys, Lieutenant. Tell the audience, if you please, what it is that you are facing if things go against you.
Well, certainly, you know, I'm going to be charged within the next few days, and then I'm going to face a court-martial. They're going to try to, I think, first they'll try to set an example, so they're going to pile on as many charges as they can. They're going to run up the length of imprisonment anywhere from 2 to 5 years and beyond, dishonorable discharge. A lot of things that, you know, they'll try to convict me based on these things like disobeying a lawful order and missing movement by design, but things that on the outside, really, those convictions would not mean anything. But definitely they're going to try to set a precedent, set an example, so that other soldiers won't follow my footsteps.
I have to think that would, in the still small moments of the night, that's got to be pretty terrifying.
Oh, yeah. No, it is. I mean, that's your freedom being stripped away from you for that whole time.
I mean, we're talking about Leavenworth time, right?
Right. And, you know, all this stripped away for what I believe is doing the right thing. But, you know, I made that sacrifice. I made that commitment to sacrifice when I joined the military. You know, people join the military and they say, well, I'll sacrifice my life to defend my country. And I believe I'm doing the same thing. I'm sacrificing my freedom, my liberty, in my own small way, hopefully to inspire others that what I'm doing and what we can do is still uphold the values of democracy and our laws that make America so great.
Well, you've got that statement at your website. If people want to come and support you with their names and their signatures, what does that mean in the scope of what you're attempting to do?
You mean like signing the petition?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what signing the petition will do. It's a kind of show of solidarity, a symbolic symbolic showing of solidarity. Definitely what we want to do is, or what I want to do is just hopefully to inspire and encourage all Americans to kind of personally sacrifice something if they really are opposed to this war and really want to bring the troops home right now, immediately. And as we've seen, the administration's not going to do it. The politicians just continue to do partisan politics and debate this and debate that, and not really nothing is solved. And more of my brothers and sisters are dying over there. But we, you know, we can bring them home. I think if they show support for soldiers, members of the military who are willing to do the right thing, and the more and more members of the military who do that, I think the less manpower this military will have to fight the war.
And that may hopefully bring it to its end. Now you, we're on the East Coast, so it's 9:30 here. It's 6:30 there. My show starts at 4 o'clock Pacific time. You weren't able to participate in this program at that hour, were you?
I'm sorry?
You weren't able to. I mean, there's a reason you weren't able to call earlier in the program. You've been muzzled by the military at this point during duty hours. Is that correct?
Right. Well, yeah. They've gave me strict guidelines, and they said it's pretty broad. I mean, it's pretty general guidelines for anybody speaking out publicly. You can't wear a uniform. You can't talk to the press during duty hours. You have to coordinate with the public affairs office. Can't make any disloyal or disrespectful statements. And right now I am under investigation. I've been accused of making disloyal statements. And so they're investigating and trying to see if they can charge me or not.
Well, earlier in the program and previously on this program, Lieutenant, you said get the troops home now. That's the only alternative at this point, isn't it?
I believe so.
I mean, if we're talking timetables or waiting for the Iraqis to stand up so we can sit down, or you know, whatever it is, the latest thing that's been said by the administration, that's just an excuse to get more people killed, isn't it?
I believe so. You know, just like John Kerry said, you know, 30 years ago, he said, you know, something to the effect of, how can you tell one man to be the last one to die for his country?
For a mistake, I think, was what he said.
Yeah.
For a mistake.
And you know, Robert McNamara said that they knew 5 years into the war that it was a lost cause. But that still many more Americans and Vietnamese died after that, after they came to that conclusion. And the fact of the matter is, in this war, is that our very presence, our occupation of Iraq is fueling this insurgency, and the minute we are gone, then that's one less excuse they have.
You know, we could, you know, right after we pulled the statue of Saddam down, if we'd turned around and gone out and said, well, congratulations, we got rid of Saddam for you, sort it out for yourselves, do you think the circumstances would have been different?
Certainly, I think so. I think there were a lot of mistakes. I'm no expert, but a lot of mistakes were made by the coalition provincial authority at the beginning in the reconstruction phase, and it's all really coming to light now. With the whole reconstruction thing was just total failure. And I think a lot of evidence has come to light that the whole intent of Paul Bremer being there was to just basically divide up the country into just looting the country for you know, corporate profit.
And it goes back to Jay Garner getting there and being told not to unpack.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with that circumstance. Lieutenant Watata, I don't want to keep you on too long. You've had a long day at work. And I'm sure that the night is just as long, and it'll be a short time indeed before you have to get up and go and do it again. I thank you so much for joining us. As a parting word, is there any way that you can condense your passion, your conviction in this matter, and let people know what it is you're seeking to do, why you're doing it, how you hope to motivate others?
Simply put, I'm doing this for the troops, for the soldiers. Just like I said, if there's anything I can do to end this war, to oppose it, to end it earlier, end it immediately, bring them home, I'm going to do it.
Now, there's a donate page at your website. Are you trying to put together a legal defense fund, something along those lines?
Yes. I'm sure that the legal expenses are going to be considerable the longer this drags out. And so... yes, there is something set up on the website, and also a lot of the groups and my supporters are trying to put together a national day of protest on June 27th for people to get out, get with certain groups, and in any way they can oppose this war and support what I'm doing.
And that's also got a descriptive link on the page?
Correct.
Lieutenant Watada, I thank you so very much for your time. Sir, may I say that I honor you for your service, and so much I honor you for the conscience that you bring to your duty as an officer. I believe you, frankly, I believe you're out of the old mold, and not part of some cookie cutter confraternity of the so-called modern military. There was a time in this nation where the officer corps was elected from within the ranks. I have no doubt that in that day and in that age, Lieutenant, that you would be gladly elected by your men to the position in which you now serve. I wish you the best. And if there's anything we can do, please tell your folks to feel free to get in touch with us. All I can say is Godspeed and God bless the America that you serve and you yourself, sir.
Thank you, Bob.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Lieutenant Aaron Watada. I got chills. There aren't a lot that come from where he's coming from in this country anymore. The chat room tells me they are equally grateful for the stand he has taken. And you, I'm sure you do. This is no easy thing to do. A person who takes his oath as seriously, if a man takes his oath seriously enough to inquire into the legality of the order that he is given, you know that he must be an ethical, a moral, and above all, a conscientious officer. If he gritted his teeth and went on to Iraq, I have no doubt that he would do everything in his power to protect the men in his charge and to honor the oath that he took. But the highest oath he took was to the Constitution of the United States, and that is the distinction that is drawn in this matter. The Constitution of the United States, it's not a poll, it's not a phone poll on American Idol. Oh, well, 72% of those polled say they believe the Constitution of the United States makes it perfectly all right to go and bomb the snot out of a small foreign country and kill 150,000 women and children. It's not how it works. And under the laws of Nuremberg, each individual member is called upon to be motivated and actuated by his conscience. Lieutenant Watada is that man. It is easy to go through life in these United States in almost any calling, any endeavor, any undertaking, with no regard for the ethics or morality of what we do. The fact that there are bill collectors out there is living proof of that. The fact that there are repo men out there is living proof of that. There are people in this country who are more than willing to do heinous and awful things as long as there is a sufficient amount of money involved. Lieutenant Watada is a very erudite and well-spoken man. Can you imagine if he had gone to Iraq and come back and told his story in print? Can you imagine the veritable font of money that would be there for him? And all he'd have to do was wave the flag a little bit and talk about how righteous and justifiable and moral and godly and Christian and American it is to go and participate in a war that is patently illegal. Regnery Press would pick it up. Newsmax would buy it by the 100,000 load at a loss and sell it to their mouth-breathing faithful for 99 cents a copy. And the next thing you know, it'd be on the New York Times bestseller list with one of those little cross daggers by it. Millions and millions sold, you know, and the little symbol means that it's been purchased in bulk. He'd be on the talk show circuit. Flush Flemball would be falling over himself. I think a lot. I think a lot about that story from the New Testament. And, I'm a product of my upbringing, and I took this stuff seriously when I was a kid. And that story about how Satan takes Yeshua up onto the mountain and says, "Behold, everything that lies before you, I will give to you. Because it's mine to give." Now, if you're reading it from a literalist standpoint and you really believe that the dude with the cloven hooves and the horns and the tail and the red suit took a guy with a pair of sandals on, long hair and a long curly hair and a beard and brown skin in a shabby robe up on a hill and no. But if we examine our own lives in that kind of light, and we are progressives, and we are liberals, and frankly, we are more morally developed, we are more ethically developed than the Limbaughs and the O'Reillys and those scum-sucking fools. There has been a time in your life, just as there have been times in mine, when you too have been taken up to that mountain. And you too have been offered the world and all its riches, and all you had to do was bow down. And by bowing down, that means all you had to do was cast aside every last bit of your morality, your humanity, and your ethics. And the world would roll at your feet. And you know what? It's true. That moment came Lieutenant Watada's way, and he rejected it in favor of being able to sleep at night and being able to someday look his children in the eye and say, "Daddy did the right thing when the time came." I consider it is an honor to have spoken with him. It is an honor to say that I know him, even if in passing. Go to the website, thankyoult.org, sign the petition. You can go to headonradionetwork.com. It's posted there. You can shoot to it right through, and you'll go right to where you need to be. If you've got, we've always got the handout. If you've got a few bucks for the Legal Defense Fund, lawyers aren't cheap, and good lawyers are really not cheap. And that man deserves the best lawyer that money can hire. Because that man is standing up not only for himself, he's standing up for those whom he doesn't want to see slaughtered. And he's standing up for the very conscience of a nation. Honor him as he honors you. Let's do take a break. I heard the music a minute ago. I'm sorry, dear. I babbled right over it. We'll be back. A few minutes left in the program if you want to get a thought or two in. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
I can take care of myself. I can make a peanut butter sandwich. I can brush my teeth and I can give myself a bath. I can walk home alone from school. I can pick dinner from the trash behind the deli. I can watch the baby for the whole weekend. I can keep a baseball bat by my bed just in case there's trouble. Don't worry about me. I can take care of myself.
If you're in jail, who'll be there to take care of your family? Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
1 + 1 = 2. Eat ice cream too fast and you'll get a brain freeze. Always talk quietly in the library.
If you're going to be 2 hours late, pick up the phone and call!
Remember, you're always teaching. Teach carefully. React with rage and kids will learn it's okay to do the same. Keep your cool and kids will do likewise. For advice, visit actagainstviolence.org. Brought to you by MetLife Foundation, National Association for the Education of Young Children, and the Ad Council.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. So now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the decider. I'm the decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Mention it in a while. Not this. I'm Bob Kincaid. That I mention all the time. Now, I haven't mentioned it in a while, but I had a real what I sensed was a calling to the military as a kid growing up and as a teenager. I felt it profoundly enough to pursue a an appointment to one of the service academies, and it was I was successful. I'm sorry, we're having some dead air here because there are two little Kincaids who, you know, things get hold of them and they can't resist. They got to ask questions during the show, and, you know, I got to answer them. Son, Gravlax is not technically cooked. It is treated. It is salmon. It is smoked. It's delicious. Now, go. Thank you. See, that's what little brothers do to little sisters. You ate raw fish. Okay, so anyway, I have a certain degree, or felt a certain degree of affinity with Lieutenant Watata because I, you know, when you apply for one of those things, you know, they don't just send you a card in the mail and go, well, you're in. Oh, no. You go and you get physicals, and there's a bunch of letter writing, whole bunch of stuff. And I went through it. I went through all of it. I didn't want to go to, you know, I didn't want to go to West Point. I didn't want to go to the Air Force Academy. I didn't want to go to the Coast Guard Academy or the Merchant Marine Academy. I wanted to go to Annapolis. I wanted to go to the Naval Academy because my father had been in the Navy in the Second World War. And I remember it so well, pursuing it, the letters to the congressman. And, you know, I could, in my mind's eye, with my imagination, I could see where it was going to lead. It was honor. It was duty. And then, in January of 1981, a vile, hateful, filthy, rotten, disgusting, bloodthirsty old man named Ronald Wilson Reagan took office. And I'd seen the campaign and I'd seen the sleaze, and I realized that I would not be able to just look at whoever was in that office and snap a salute and say, yowza. And having watched Ronald Reagan take over the office of the President of the United States, I picked up a pen and I wrote a letter and said I wanted no part of it. It's one of those little forks in the road where you wonder what might have happened otherwise. But to about a millionth of a degree, I understand a little bit of what Lieutenant Watata is talking about. I felt I could not participate in a military that would be headed by a monster like Ronald Reagan. What must it feel like to be an officer serving under the likes of a puke like George W. Bush? So I honor his commitment and his decision. Let's do go to the phones. Wayne is joining us. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the show.
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Doing good.
Very good interview.
Heck of a man.
Very good. Oh, an amazing man. I have great admiration for that young man. I think he's very, very brave. Very brave. But, you know, like talking about the investigation and these, all the protocol that he has to follow and can't talk to these people or that people, and everything has to be cleared by who?
The public affairs officer?
I think that's what he said.
Gee, I wonder if he was listening tonight.
Oh, buddy. You better bet. I'd bet my...
God, if Agent Fred wasn't listening before, he will be now.
Oh, he will. And, you know, that's kind of what I called. You know, just to see, do you realize that you are now under investigation?
Oh, I'm sure.
Maybe
I am.
The greatest thing that, you know, well, I mean, hell, you probably were before anyway, but... Now you move to the top of the might be the greatest thing ever happened to Ed on radio. You might have to go away, but you know.
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah. Jesus.
Any, you'd take one for the team, wouldn't you?
Yeah, right in the neck.
You know, these people are evil, man. You know, I would almost guarantee that was monitored. You know, so that, you know, to see what he said, can we add another charge? Can we, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, the whole nine yards, you know. Listen, they have to be scared to death of this young man.
They're terrified of him.
Sure they are. You know, somebody that has enough, is emboldened.
Yeah,
enough,
that old Serbian word again.
Is emboldened enough to speak the truth. great I have great admiration for him. He's fighting a hell of a fight, man. Fighting a hell of a fight. Because these people are evil. And I don't know if, in my military career, I was involved in one court martial and a friend of mine. And it's one of the coldest proceedings that you will ever witness in your life. I mean, it's cold. I don't know how else to describe it. So,
yeah.
But I'm glad you had him on. I think that's really great. I think that's really great. Now, he's being charged this week. Is that?
As soon as his unit deploys and he refuses to go, he gets charged.
He gets charged. And that, well, he's.
And see, I wouldn't put it past him to be just real, real jerks about this, too, you know. And insist that he be incarcerated during the pendency of the proceedings, refuse him a reasonable bail. He's a likely flight risk to Canada, yada, yada.
Oh, believe me, they will pull out all the stops, man. And, you know, and just listening to him, I think he's prepared. I think he realizes what they're capable of. And I hope he does, because these people are capable of very evil things.
Well, evil people usually are.
They want to, they need.
Well, look, I mean, Wayne, look, if they really try to drop the hammer on him, is there any doubt whatsoever in anyone's mind that that is the kind of order that comes all the way down from the desk of Donald Rumsfeld?
That's exactly where it will come from.
Because
they
have to
make an example.
I mean,
listen,
because
they need to send a lot more kids, you know, they have to put the fear of God into all these kids that might be thinking the same thing, you know. And, you know, so then the conclusion comes, well, at least if I go to Iraq or Iran or wherever we decide to do some preeminent war next, I might have a shot of making it. If I refuse to go, I'm going to spend the rest of my life in Leavenworth. And that's what they're trying to instill.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they're trying to do.
Well, you know, what a hell of a Hobson's choice to hand a young man. Go to Iraq, and if you survive it, well, okay, maybe you'll come back with a limb missing, or maybe you'll come back with everything intact, but your mind will be screwed.
Oh, yeah, you certainly won't come, you know, you might come back whole, but you will not come back sane. That's for damn sure.
Or do five years of the Cool Hand Luke thing in Leavenworth.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know, I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, what they could charge this guy with, I don't know if 5 years is, you know. I mean, that seems very light.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not to me, but, you know, you understand what
I mean. Well, and long before there was ever Abu Ghraib, there was Fort Leavenworth.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Well, and there still is Fort Leavenworth.
Yeah, and that place is a torture hole.
That's exactly what it is.
Because what was done to the Amish during the First World War.
Yep.
And labor organizers who refused to support the war,
yep,
refused to go, hung up by their thumbs, literally.
Those weren't labor organizers. Those were communists.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, commie bomb throwers.
Exactly.
Right. Jesus. No, I admire a man like that. And again, you know, like I said, it's got to come from somebody like Rumsfeld, because, you know, even though he's a pissant, I mean, and I'll use that word, I don't think George Bush has the individual personal courage to look and say, oh, guy doesn't want to go fight a war because he, I don't think, no.
What should we do, Donnie?
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing, because George, well, you know, that was kind of his M.O. during Vietnam.
That's exactly what was his M.O.
You know, let a whole bunch of other people go and die while daddy gets me into a unit in the Texas Air National Guard with members of the Dallas Cowboys.
All right, yeah, listen. I mean, in many ways, I almost feel sorry for the goofy son of a gun, man, because, I mean, he's just a puppet. He is truly a puppet, you know. I'm telling you, I tried to tell you a month or so ago, we should have let him be baseball commissioner.
Oh, boy, don't I wish we had.
Yeah.
You know, and I wouldn't want his life, Wayne, because at the end of it all, when he finally reaches the end of his roads and days, he has to look down at himself and say, my life has been meaningless.
And I let them use me as an idiot to justify all their stupid stuff. And, you know, I mean, I think he's intelligent enough that someday he will come to that realization.
Yeah, Bill Clinton called him an intuitive thinker the other day, and the crowd laughed.
Intuitive thinker?
Yeah, he's a very intuitive thinker. And the crowd laughed.
He's never had a thought in his life.
Well, see, Bill's trying to be nice. You know, he's a Southern boy.
Maybe where can I get some more Coke or another, you know, bottle? Or
bet you that feller over there's got an eight ball. You know, that's intuitive thinking,
exactly.
Wayne.
Exactly. You know, or wonder how Daddy's going to bail me out of this one. I mean,
that's intuitive. He knew Daddy would bail him out.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess he is an intuitive thinker then.
Thus saith the former President Rhodes Scholar, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, jeez,
right.
I remember the good old days.
Yeah, I'm not real happy with him either, so. But he was a hell of a lot better than this, whatever this is.
You can say pissant.
I can say pissant?
Yeah.
There's a lot of other things I'd run.
Well, you know, and now that we're being listened to by the public affairs officer, I'm sure they'd like for you to, too.
Yeah, and so I will not, you know. I will not. But
Colonel Flagg, that's who it is listening, Wayne.
Oh, okay, right.
Sitting there in the garbage can. Sitting there in the garbage can with his secret computer headphones on. I hear you, Kincaid.
Oh, I forgot all about Colonel Flagg.
Colonel Flagg, public affairs officer. Jesus. We got to get out of here, Wayne. Thanks a lot, man.
Okay, buddy.
See ya.
Have a good one.
All right. Bye. Do you know I can kill you with the fingernail on my little finger? Colonel Flagg, public affairs officer. Look, that's it. Many thanks to Lieutenant Aaron Watata for joining us tonight. And many thanks to you, however you listen, be it live, archive, podcast, perhaps you listen at radiopower.org. Thank you. Sharing your time with us is the most valuable gift.